Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here. And now, for the first time, we are bringing to you the full story of what happened on that fateful day. We are giving you all the evidence based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. The incidents, the places. My friend, we cannot keep this a secret any longer. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent. My friend, can your heart stand the shocking facts about
Radio Mysterioso?
Okay, thanks for waiting. It's Radio Mysterioso here for the 26th of June, 2011. And since I've only got one line here for the music and the phone line here, I will call our guest, Jeffrey Gonzalez, here momentarily. Gonzalez is the head of the Sanger Paranormal Society, located in Sanger, California, which is basically right next to Fresno, which is where a news conference took place on Thursday of this last week, where Gonzalez and his team presented evidence, they said, of fairly good evidence, they said, of Bigfoot living in the Sierra Nevada mountains. Now, of course, Bigfoot's been seen everywhere, every state in the Union, different versions all over the world. It's not a surprise that they'd be in the Sierras. Perfect, a lot of wilderness and perfect area for something like that to survive. But we'll get into that over the show here. Let's call Jeffrey Gonzalez here.
Hello.
Oh, there you are. Wow, I faded it in just right. I gave you an introduction. You didn't hear it, but I talked about the Sanger Paranormal Society and a little bit about the press conference, but we'll get into that a little bit on the show. Jeffrey Gonzalez, okay. How are you?
Good. Very good. Thanks.
You just got finished doing your podcast or show that you do every Sunday night, right?
Actually, I didn't do it tonight because I just wanted to relax. I'm just going to pretty much open up tonight on your show. So I'm going to talk for the first time about the press conference on your show tonight.
Oh, excellent. I didn't know that. I thought you'd been, interviewed everywhere up to now.
Yeah, I decided, you know what, I'm just going to... No, actually, you're my first interview since the press conference.
I said a little bit about the press conference and why it was called. Maybe you can let's do a little background first.
Sure.
The first thing I ask everybody, and I think a lot of radio shows do this, which is kind of dumb, but you'll see how different this show is as it goes on. I ask the guests, how did you get interested in this strange stuff in the first place? And I know you're not just, it's not just Bigfoot. People think you're a Bigfoot researcher, but you're into all kinds of different paranormal stuff. So how'd that interest start out?
I guess when it all started when I was a kid. And just like everybody else, this stuff was so interesting to me. I remember, I think in junior high, we had In Search Of. Okay, I hear an echo.
Oh, sorry about that.
That's okay. That was throwing me off. I remember back in the 70s, I think 70s, early 80s, or late 70s, you had, the original In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy, and then you had Project Blue Book, and then you had Kolchak the Night Stalker. Remember those shows? Those shows were the bomb to me. And I remember, when it was time to watch those shows, I was in front of the TV just like everyone else who loved this stuff. And, after I started, watching all those shows and I started reading books and started getting familiar with all the weird stuff that we had, around the world. And I guess it's always stuck with me. And then, and that was, through school, elementary school and high school. And, and after graduating, I went to college and I came back to the Sanger area, Fresno area in 2000. And in about 4 years after I got back, so about 2004, 2005 is when I really started getting into the paranormal, where I was hearing a lot of stuff from family and friends about, just weird stuff happening here in the valley. And I started doing some research, and I started asking around, and there was just a lot of crazy stuff happening here, and I couldn't believe it. From, you know, I mean, ghosts and spirits are pretty much a dime a dozen. I mean, anywhere you go, you hear that type of stuff. But when you have close friends coming and telling you that they see a lot of weird stuff in the skies over Fresno.
Yeah.
And then people started, you know, telling me about, did you hear about the Bigfoot sighting, you know, at this location down here? And I'm all, what are you talking about? I mean, what's happening here? So I am, you know, I am familiar with the electronics field. I went to college. Matter of fact, you're in L.A., right?
Yep, in Los Angeles.
What about in L.A., guys?
We're right near, I'm broadcasting actually from Vermont and Beverly.
Okay. So I went to L.A. in 84 and came back in 2000. I went to the DeVry Institute of Technology right there in Crossroads Parkway and 57 Freeway. And I was down there for 14 years. As a matter of fact, I got involved in music, but that's another story. So as far as electronics go, I have a degree in electronics. So I am pretty well, you know, I can, you know, when it comes to wiring and gadgets, I'm there. So I know a lot about security systems and cameras, security cameras. So with that in mind, I figured, you know what, this ghost thing sounds pretty interesting and pretty easy. I mean, if ghost hunters can do it, and you have to remember Jason and Grant, you know, they're plumbers by trade. Okay, well, I have a degree in electronics, and I work for AT&T now, and I've been involved in that type of stuff all my life, so I think I could put stuff together myself, and I did. It wasn't hard at all. So with that, I started, you know, investigating, you know, ghosts and hauntings with a couple of my friends, and then it started getting more serious, and then a lot of people started calling me, and then that's when I decided to put a team together, which I did, and I started investing more of my time and my money, and then after the ghost thing, I became involved in the unidentified flying objects. I was actually involved in MUFON for a while. I was an investigator for MUFON, and then I became a section director for MUFON for 2 years. And I recently quit MUFON about 2 months ago because I started my own show, radio show, you know, internet show, and MUFON told me I could not talk about any other cases on the air. And that really upset me because I pretty much gave them 2 years of my life, and I did a lot of stuff for MUFON as far as doing the investigations and found a lot of stuff and got a lot of good information. And here they're telling me, oh, we don't want you talking about MUFON on the air. So with that in mind, I said, okay, well, then I'm done. And I pretty much told them I resigned as state section director, and that was the end of that for MUFON. So, and that was, you know, like about 2 months ago. Now, as far as Bigfoot goes, Bigfoot started happening to me in early of 2009. Bigfoot is a big subject for me and a big interest for me, and I wanted to get involved somehow. Somebody told me we had a veteran Bigfoot investigator here in Fresno, and his name was David Regosa, and he's been doing it for over 20 years, and I had no clue until 2009 when somebody told me about him. So somehow, I don't remember how I got his number or email. I think it was an email. I emailed him, and I told him who I was and what I was doing and that I wanted more information on Sasquatch and if I could, you know, somehow at one point talk to him. And he got a hold of me back, and the guy's a busy man. David Regosa is a high school principal here at Fresno, California. He's an award-winning high school principal. He has a master's in education, used to be a science teacher. And so he has all the credentials that you would want as far as a Bigfoot investigator go. You know, it's just not some Joe Blow who decided one day to go and look for Bigfoot. I mean, this guy has credentials and he knows what he's doing as far as science goes.
Right.
So I went, and in early 2009, I met him. We talked for a while, and I tried to get more information from him and how he started and how long he's been doing it. And then he told me that 8.5 years ago, he came to finding a location east of Fresno that a elderly Native American told him that his ancestors told him that there's a family of these creatures that are living in that area. So David finally got the coordinates and started going to this location by himself at first. And he's been doing this for 8.5 years at that spot, bringing friends of his and whoever would want to go with him. And in, like I said, in 2009, that's when I started going with him. And in Memorial Day weekend, so happens, of 2009, is when, if those who want to go to my website, is when we captured a photograph of a 9-foot to 10-foot large Sasquatch on a game camera. And that's on my website. And ever since then, it's pretty much been on a wild journey with him. You know, we go as many times as possible. You know, him being the profession that he has, he's also married, has kids, just like me. You know, I work for AT&T Telephone, and I have kids. You know, I have a job. So we try to go as much as we can, that time will allow us. So we go during the winter, summer, spring, falls, whenever we can. And, you know, it's like when people heard about the story, they thought that a bunch of guys decided one day to go on a camping trip and say, hey, let's call it a Bigfoot Expedition 2011. And then this happens to us. And then a lot of people are going, ah, this is BS. It's a hoax. It's a joke. These guys don't even know what they're doing, which is all totally 100% wrong. We've been, again, you know, David's been going this for 8.5 years, and he has many videos, many photographs of weird things in that area that would blow your mind. And he showed some of them during the press conference. And he still has a lot of stuff that is stored away that he's keeping for a special location. And so what happened is, you know, we decided to do another Bigfoot expedition, 2011. And that's when all this happened, you know, almost a month ago.
So, can you hear me there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's some kind of a motor going outside, which is loud and annoying. Have you had any experiences of your own, like when you were younger?
As far as,
well, anything paranormal.
Anything. Oh yeah. What got me started really is when I first saw my first UFO, and that was when I was in junior high in Sanger, where I grew up, and that is just, you know, east of Fresno. And we'll let those sirens pass by. That happens here too, so don't worry about it. I know what it sounds like.
Yeah, it's pretty annoying.
I think I was maybe sixth grade, I think. I was in my backyard in Sanger with my sister, who was 3 years younger than me, and my neighbor. We were out playing in the backyard, and we looked up at about sundown, probably about, I'm thinking, 6 o'clock, and we noticed what I now remember. And now you have to remember, we're talking 30-something years ago, you know. What looked like a beer can, a silver beer can hovering in the sky with color lights around it and just hovering there. And I remember, you know, telling myself, you know, that shouldn't be there. That shouldn't be hovering like that in the sky, because I know I'm not dumb. I know what a helicopter looks like and an airplane and a blimp and a balloon, and none of that stuff resembled this thing at all. And it scared the you-know-what out of me. I just remember looking at it and thinking, what the heck is that? And going through my head, it's none of the above. I remember grabbing my sister by the hand, and I told my neighbor to run home quick. And me and my sister ran into the house. I remember sliding the door. And I specifically remembered running underneath the kitchen table and going underneath and getting on my knees and putting my head between my legs and covering my face, because this thing really scared me. I don't know why. I mean, yeah, it's a silver, dumb object in the sky, but this thing really, really scared me. And I remember to this day doing that. I don't remember what I did after that. I mean, that's just the only thing I remember as far as, you know, coming inside and getting underneath the kitchen table. But that really scared me. And I guess that's pretty much what started it off for me after that, is that sighting. My neighbor also remembers that sighting very well. We talk about it whenever we see each other, and we don't see each other very often, but we always talk about it, and we kind of, you know, try to remember what it looked like. She has a different view on it, and so do I. But then again, you have to remember we were in junior high school and elementary school, and she was like in fifth or fourth grade. So, but that, and when it comes to ghost hunting. Another incident that happened to me was at my dad's ranch, when he used to have a ranch, south of Sanger, and we were, it was a big shed, you know, 100 foot by, you know, 70 foot shed, and maybe 150 by 75 foot shed. It was a pretty big shed. And I was inside working on something on the table in there with all the tools. I think I was putting up some speakers for my dad in the, so he can have music while he was working on tractors. And he had a helper there, and he spoke Spanish. So, you know, we were talking and communicating because I speak Spanish. You know, I'm, you know, Mexican. So, and he told me that, you know, the place was haunted, and he was telling me all these things, and I didn't believe him. And then our backs were turned to where our you know, the, we were working on the bench. And all of a sudden, we both heard cowboy boots behind us. And I thought it was my dad trying to sneak up and it was going to scare the crap out of me. And we both turned around together to go, ah, you know, type of deal, like to get him. And there was nobody there. And I turned to him, and I remember him telling me in Spanish, see, I told you. And I go, whoa, what a trip. And then, so, you know, but that's pretty much all that's happened to me. You know, I've gone on a lot of investigations for ghosts and stuff like that. But I hate to say it, but what you see on TV nowadays is not all true. You know, ghosts don't appear on command. You know, we can go to the most haunted place there is and don't expect to get anything the first time. That's not the way it works.
Right.
You know, you can, you know, I have all the equipment that it takes. Matter of fact, I probably have more equipment than anybody that I can, you know, I could, like I said, I'm a electronics geek. So I have all kinds of stuff. And, you know, we can set up, you know, 10, 15 cameras in a place for a whole night with, you know, digital recorders and the whole nine yards and EMF detectors. And somebody might say, you know what, this place is really, really haunted, and we'll go through the whole night and not get a single thing.
Right.
You know, so the I mean, if you really, really, really want to do a thorough investigation, then you'll probably have to set up all the equipment and leave it there for about a week or 2 weeks. You know, I mean, that's the only way I think that you're going to be able to find something, if any. I mean, nowadays, when you look at ghost hunters or ghost adventurers or any other group like that, and every place they go, they seem to, you know, to get something. Well, I hate to say it, but that's not the way it really happens. You know, so, I hate to say that, but it's the truth.
Yeah,
honest to God truth.
You said that at the preface conference that your group had been going, and a couple people in the group had been going there to this area in the Sierras for years.
Right.
And this is the only, and recently it had gotten more active, so you'd all gone up there, right? And that's when this incident occurred. Why don't you describe for everybody what you said at the press conference and what evidence that you presented?
Sure. Well, what happened is this past Memorial Day weekend, which was, I believe, I can remember, May the 27th, I think it was on a Friday. You know, we left on a Friday. And it was six of us total. We went in three trucks, my truck, David's Jeep, and another Toyota truck. The Toyota truck is a 4x4. David's truck is a Jeep Cherokee, so that is a 4x4. But I have a Ford F-150 pickup, extra cab, and that's not a 4x4. So it, down here in the Sierras, we've been having, and just like throughout the United States, you know, the weather's been crazy. So we've been having a lot of rain, a lot of snow. And where we go, it's the elevation is 5,500 feet, 5,500 feet, okay? So it's more like in a canyon type of deal. And it has no paved roads. You know, once the paved road ends on where we go, then you have to take dirt roads to get into this location. So these roads are not often well kept by the ranger service of the Sierras. You know, they pretty much just let it go. So,
yeah.
You know, you're talking holes that when your truck gets into them, it'll go up to about half. If it's filled with water, then it'll go up to about half to where your door is at. Okay, so we're talking really, really deep and muddy and really, really bad. So, you know, that Friday when we all went up there, you know, it was both the trucks. Joseph, the one who drives the Toyota, met us there. So he was already there at the site. And David was in front of me, and I was driving right behind him. And, you know, David put it in 4x4, and he was going through it. And, you know, he had some problems getting through it, but he made it. And it was my turn. And I had to really, you know, hit the gas, put it in second gear, and just go for it. And sometimes I would get stuck, and I'd have to back it up, rock it until I got out. And I thought at one point I was, you know, not getting out of one of those holes. But at least David was there, so, you know, if that happened, then he was going to be able to pull me out. But finally made it. You know, we got to the site, you know, both, you know, set up camp, set up the fire, made dinner, and, you know, we turned in about 12 o'clock that night. The following morning, Saturday, we got up, had breakfast, and we went hiking. Because that's what we do. When we go to this place, in order to go in search of, you know, you got to go hiking for hours and hours and hours. And that's what we do. You know, if you're not in good shape, if you are the type of person who gets tired very easy, then I suggest then to go with us, there's no way you'd be able to make it. Because, you know, we constantly walk up hills, walk down hills, and we're talking, you know, the forest and brush, and sometimes you'll slip and you'll fall. But so you have to be in pretty good shape to do what we do. Now, you know, Saturday we went, you know, walking everywhere, and it was a non-event day. I mean, it was pretty dead that day, Saturday. So, you know, Saturday night comes along, and, you know, we set up the fire, and we ate dinner. You know, about 12:30 comes around, and we go to sleep. And about 1 o'clock in the morning, it starts raining, and we're going, oh, crap. You know, that's all we need is more mud on the dirt roads. So, you know, we are hearing the rain come down, our tent starts leaking. You know, we get outside, and we start throwing tarps over everything, over our tents. And then about 1:30 comes around, and then finally Joe says, you know what, well, you know, we better get out of here if we're going to make it out of here, because this water is going to, you know, we're going to get stuck in here. And David goes, well, you know, it's pitch dark out there. If we try to get out right now, and if one of our vehicles gets stuck, then we're really screwed. Then, you know, we're not going any place, and that truck is going to be there for a long time. So we decided, you know, let's just hold off, and let's just wait until sun up, and let's see what happens. So sun up came about 5:30. David got up and walked outside, and, you know, was walking around, and, you know, we were all still snoring away, and all of a sudden David comes back in the tent and yells at us, says, dude, it's snowing, and we're going, crap. So he says, we need to pack up, and we need to get out of here now. So we got up, you know, dressed really quick, got outside, and sure enough, it's snowing, and we're going, no. So we started breaking down, you know, the campsite, you know, and when we came in, my truck was packed up to the top, you know, with ice chests full of food, all the camping equipment, and I had everything nice and organized. But, you know, if we were going to do that, be nice and organized, you know, it's going to take more time. So we just said, screw it, and we started throwing everything in there, just piling everything up. And then David went to go start his Jeep up, and it didn't start. And he's going, oh, crap. So I got my jumper cables, I tried jumping them, and his Jeep still did not crank over. I guess either, I think it was something more than the battery, because the battery was just not holding charge. And luckily I had a voltmeter, I checked it, and it was only like 4 volts. So he goes, crap, I'm going to have to leave my Jeep here. And you have to understand, we're in the middle of freaking nowhere, man. I mean, we're out in the middle of the boonies. Nobody goes to this spot, period. So he goes, I'm going to have to leave my Jeep here. And, you know, at that time, it's starting to rain and snow, you know, so we got sleet happening. And then he turns to me, and he's noticing the dirt roads, how bad they're getting. And he goes, Jeff, he goes, I go, what? He goes, you're not going to be able to make it out of here. And I'm going, yeah, I will. And he goes, no, you won't. And so I got in my truck really quick, and I tried backing up and getting out of the spot we were at. And my tires were just spinning. No traction at all. That's how bad the mud was. And I finally realized, crap, I'm not going to be able to get out of here either. So thinking in my back of my mind is going, you know, in 2 days I got to go to work, and I don't have a truck. I'm screwed. So David goes, you know what, you're going to have to leave it here, and we need to get out of here now, because if we need to pile up in a Joe's truck and get out of here before we really can't get out. So he said, everybody grab all of your most expensive stuff that you cherish and throw it in the Joe's truck, and let's get out of here. So I left everything in the back of my bed in my truck, all the camping equipment, 4 ice chests full of food, open, you know, fried chicken, hot dogs. I mean, everything was back there. And even on the top of the bed, like tucked inside the side, we had open pastries, potato chips, loaves of bread. I mean, like I said, you know, when we were trying to get out of there. We were just throwing everything in there. So we weren't being any nice and neat about it. So I grabbed anything that I could think of that I thought had value to it, you know, and I threw it in the other truck, and all of us got in. It's a Toyota truck, and it's smaller than mine. So there was three in the front, three in the back, and we were all squished like sardines. So we started to head out, you know. And he had it in 4x4, and he's going through big puddles, you know. I mean, literally water coming up to about half of the door. And he's tired of spinning, going sideways, and we're like praying big time, come on, Joe, you can do it. We get out of a big hole. We come into another one. It's like mud everywhere. And then finally we get stuck. And so he says, you know what? You know, David goes, you know what? Let's get out. Everybody starts searching for wood, broken down, you know, tree branches, and start throwing them on the dirt road for traction. And a time of what should have taken us 10 to 15 minutes to get out took us an hour and a half, because, you know, we had to stop, get out, make traction for the tires, get back in, and keep doing that till we finally got out and we went, oh, thank God. Then, at that point in time, it finally hit me. I forgot my laptop computer in my back seat of my truck. And now I'm freaking big time. I mean, because I have everything in that laptop computer. I mean, that's what I do my TV show with. I mean, and, you know, it had my bank account information. It had everything in it.
Yeah, your wife said it had your taxes information.
Oh, yeah,
it
had my taxes. Yeah, it had our taxes on there. And I am freaking out. I mean, and the reason why I forgot it is because it was in the back seat underneath all the pillows and blankets. And I never took it out that weekend because the only reason why I brought it in the first place was to download the memory cards off the game cameras that David had up there already. But he brought his laptop, so I didn't have to take it out of my truck. So it was there all this time, and I completely spaced it out. So we're driving all the way back down home, and I'm stressed because of my computer. But I'm thinking, and all the guys are trying to, you know, comfort me, saying, no, don't worry, you know, there's no one's going to go there because no one can get into there, even with a 4x4. So we barely made it out, and it just started to rain and snow, that no one in their right mind is going to, even with a 4x4, try to get back up where we were at, because there's just no purpose of doing that, because out there you're stuck. So by, you know, hearing all these guys telling me, don't worry, you'll be cool, you'll be fine, it'll be fine, it comforted me a little bit, but just still thinking in the back of my head, crap, my life is in that computer. So got home, told my wife, she told me, dummy, I told you it was going to snow, and she did tell me. She said, you know what, a storm's coming in, and I didn't believe her, and sure enough, it hit us. So that Sunday afternoon, we get home, and I know everybody, I know that I'm rambling on, but, you know, I have to tell you the story because it every single bit of information I'm giving you makes sense to the very end, and I'll tell you why.
Okay.
Monday comes around, it's Memorial Day weekend. I don't have to work. I have it off. I'm still stressing about the computer. I call Alan Thomas, who was on the camping trip with us, and I called him up, and I said, Alan, he goes, dude, would you do please do me a big favor? He goes, I'll pay for gas, and I'll buy you lunch afterwards, but can you please take me back up there so I can go get my computer? And he says, sure, no problem. Because he had a blast. I mean, the poor guy is, he's disabled, and he has, he walks with a cane, and he loves Bigfoot, and he loves Sasquatch hunting, you know, and he loves this stuff. So I said, sure, let's go. So I said, well, do me a favor, Alan, can you please find somebody to walk down with me? Because when we drive up there, his van is not going to be able to drive into the site. He's going to have to park at the top of the mountain, and we're going to have to literally walk in 45 to an hour time, about 2.5 miles to get to the spot. So I said, can you please find somebody to walk down with me? Because I don't want to walk down there by myself. Because, you know, we're going into a territory where there are a lot of bears, mountain lions, and of course we know for a fact that there are Sasquatch in this area. And I don't want to go down there by myself. And David has always said, you do not come down here by yourself. You know, you always have one or two people with you. So Alan called his brother Jimmy, and Jimmy said, sure, I'll go down with him. So Jimmy and Alan, Tuesday morning, came and picked me up. We drove 2.5 hours up to the spot, got there. Alan stayed at the very top in the van, and Jimmy walked down with me. I brought my 12-gauge shotgun, and Jimmy had that with him, and I had my video camera in my other hand. And just in case, you know, something happened. I wanted you, whenever you go to this spot, everybody has a video camera in their hands because you never know what's going to happen. You got to be prepared for everything.
Right.
So we started walking down, and you know, we're walking on each side of the dirt road, and we're looking for footprints because that's what you do when you go down there. You track and you look for footprints. So we're looking, you know, we're looking, and we found nothing, no tire tracks, no human footprints, nothing. We come about 100 yards, maybe 125 yards before we get to the site, and I see what is a old dried down tree laying across the road. And I'm looking at it, and I'm going, what the hell is this doing here? And he goes, you know, 2 days ago when we left, this tree was not here because, hello, you know, this is the only road that leads us out to where we were coming from. And I told Jimmy, I go, Jimmy, this thing was not here Sunday morning when we left. And he goes, really? I go, yeah. So I'm going, okay. So we're looking around for tracks and like, okay, did somebody physically put it here on purpose? And we're looking around for tracks and we don't see anything. So I thought, okay, that's weird. So we continue going, and not more than 30 feet, we come up to another barricade of two good-sized tree limbs that someone dragged from the side of the dirt road and placed them in the middle of the dirt road. And I'm going, Jimmy, this for sure was not here on Sunday. And we saw the spot where it was dragged from. You know, it was maybe about 10 feet away. You know, but you have to understand, you know, these two roadblocks that I'm calling are, you know, really don't serve any purpose. I mean, you can physically pick them up and throw them to the side of the road.
Yeah.
But somebody put them there. And I'm going, okay, that is weird. And just didn't make any sense to me. So we continue on, go around the corner, and there's another barricade. But this one is a very simple tree limb going across the dirt road. I mean, it's very light. I mean, you can pick it up with one hand and toss it, but it's there. It is. It's laying there. And then we come up to the fourth barricade, and this one here really blew my mind. The fourth barricade was about 70 yards from the campsite. And back about 2 years ago, again, you know, we've been having a lot of snow, a lot of rain. Well, we had a massive snowstorm a couple of years ago, and with the heaviness of the snow, brought down a lot of trees. So the rangers had to come in and, you know, literally cut with saws all these trees and push them out of the way so the dirt roads would be passable. And this particular tree that was cut was on the side, and I remember, you know, we all remember seeing this tree. It's 14 feet long. The radius of it is about 14 inches. And I work for AT&T, so, you know, I know the size of telephone poles. Well, this thing was the size of a big telephone pole. And now, where this thing used to be on the side of the dirt road is now right in the middle of the dirt road. Not across it, but right in the middle. And you can see the impressions on where this thing was. It was like 4 or 5 feet from, you know, the end of the dirt road. And I'm looking, and I told Jimmy, you know, this for sure was not here on Sunday. And I was laughing, and I'm looking around. I'm going, okay, the first thing, as a paranormal investigator, okay, now it's time to start debunking. So I'm going, okay, did a park ranger come over here and see that our trucks were abandoned and saw all the camping equipment and stuff and said, you know what, I want to put this stuff here to prevent anybody from coming in? But the roads are unpassable even for a 4x4. And so we're looking around for footprints. I'm going, okay, there's no footprints. There's no new tire tracks. Okay, did a forest ranger come in by horseback? And I'm still thinking. So I decide, you know, how heavy is this thing? So I get on my knees and I try pushing it. Wouldn't even budge. I couldn't even budge it. I mean, I got on my knees and used my feet as traction to push. No way. Jimmy started laughing at me. He said, you're not going to be able to push that. And he's right. I couldn't push the damn thing. That's how heavy it was. It probably weighed 1,000 pounds. That's how heavy this thing was.
And none of these things were in the road when you left.
None of these things were in the road when we left, dude, or else we wouldn't have been able to get out.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's why I am totally tripping. I'm going, what? And, you know, again, there was no tire tracks, no footprints. And I'm going, okay, did somebody roll it over? But if two people couldn't push this thing by themselves. So I'm thinking, okay, did they? And I was thinking stupid stuff, man. Again, you know, I'm trying to debunk this. I'm going, okay, did a guy in horseback come in with a chain and, threw a chain around it and pulled it to the middle. But the only problem with that theory is that you would have seen where the dirt would have been messed with, and you would have saw traces of it being dragged. Nothing like that, man. I mean, it looked like somebody physically picked it up and put it in the middle. And I'm going, well, okay, well, then somebody rolled it over. But on this particular tree, there are still old tree branches coming out of this tree, this tree that's laying on the floor. So even if you try to push it, these tree branches would prevent you from pushing it, but you could still do it. But if you were going to do it, then the tree branches would start snapping. But I'm looking around this tree, and all the tree branches are still intact. So I'm just blown away. I'm going, who would even want to even do this, and for why? So we decided to continue on going. We got down to the location where the two vehicles were at, my truck and David's Jeep. And as soon as we got there, we started looking around for footprints, that's the first thing we do. And we're looking around, nothing. I'm looking at the vehicles. Because of the rain that came down a couple nights ago, the trucks were spotless. All the mud that were on them when we got there were all off because it washed it completely. So it looked like both trucks were, like, washed. And there was I looked for fingerprints. I looked for, claw marks, anything like that around both of the vehicles, and nothing. They were clean. And then Jimmy called me over about 30 feet from the Jeep, and he goes, dude, come here. And I walk over there, and there's this 12-foot footprint, and you can see the toes on there. And I'm going, cool, that wasn't there on Sunday because, we would have remembered seeing that. But, so there it was. It was a 12-inch footprint. It wasn't the greatest footprint in the world. At the press conference, we had a couple of questions saying, well, why didn't you cast it? Well, because footprints down there are a dime and a dozen now, okay? You saw the pictures on the screen of all the footprints that David has got in the past, and I've seen a lot too. So footprints now are just a dime and a dozen to us. We see the footprints all the time. So this was no great footprint to cast because, it's no biggie anymore. We're tired of footprints. Now we want to see the damn thing, or I want to because I haven't seen it yet. So, I looked around and everything, again, all the ice chests in the back of my truck, all the food were still there. Nothing touched. Everything was still the same. I grabbed open one of the ice chests. I grabbed some sodas and some water and some beef jerky I remember having in there for the trip up. Gave a water to Jimmy, and I took one, threw it in a backpack. Grabbed my laptop computer. I said, thank you. My laptop computer, I finally got it. Now I can sleep tonight. So I closed the door. I locked it. Boom, we started tracking out. We made it out in about an hour, and I, showed Alan at the top because I took video and pictures of all the trees and the footprint, and I showed it to him, and he goes, man, that's cool. He goes, man, I wish I could have gone down there with you, but, obviously in this condition, he couldn't. So we went back home, got home Tuesday afternoon. I called David Rigosa, and I told him what I did as far as going up to get my computer because I had to. And I told him about the trees, and he said, wow, that's very cool. And I told him about the footprint, and he said, very cool. And then he goes, Jeff, I got tomorrow off. We got to go get my Jeep. And I'm telling him, well, cool, let's go, because I need my truck. So the next morning, here we go again. Alan and Jimmy come and pick me up, and we head back up to the spot again. And we met David there, and we decided, instead of taking all of our cars down in there, we'll just leave everything up here, jump into one truck, and we'll go down in there. So we did. We jumped into Joe's truck again. And they threw me in the back of the bed because I'm the youngest. So here, we're going through like 4x4 through everything, and I'm jumping, with a wild ride, let me tell you. And we come up to the four roadblocks. So one by one, we started, clearing, the road until we got to the big giant log. And we got out, and I said, here it is. And they were blown away. So, a couple of us tried pushing it. We couldn't do it. Third guy stepped in. All three of us tried doing it. Couldn't do it.
Hey, Jeffrey?
Yeah.
One of the listeners actually wrote to me just now. He actually works for the Forest Service. He said, is it possible that any of these tree branches and logs, et cetera, could have been disturbed and fallen down on the road because of the storm?
No, because the tree, the first tree that was laid across the street, laid across the dirt road, was completely dry, like it's been on the side of the dirt, the dirt road for years. Okay, all of the you have to remember there, for example, the 14-foot log was actually cut by a chainsaw 2 years ago. So it was already laying on the side of the dirt road.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so all the stuff, like for example, the second barricade was two broken limbs that were just laying on the side of the road, and you can see the impressions where they were laying for years. So no, they did not fall across. I mean, literally somebody grabbed them and placed them in the middle of the dirt road.
But you couldn't see any footprints or anything like that, or
nothing. Nothing.
As if somebody had, like, thrown it from the side of the road or leaned it over very gently or something.
Yes, exactly. Because, like I said, you know, Jimmy and I were looking for footprints. And when we got there Wednesday morning with everybody to retrieve our trucks, you know, everybody got out and started looking for footprints. And when Jimmy and I were walking down, you know, it's like, you know, there was nothing. And, again, these guys were looking around, and they didn't see anything either. You know, we were walking. You know, we knew what our boots looked like, and you know, there was no other ones except for Jimmy's and I's now. And you know, we started clearing the dirt road, and then we came up, like I said, to the fourth barricade, which was the 1,000-pound log. And I got on my knees, tried pushing it. Somebody else got on their knees. Three people got on their knees. Still couldn't do it until somebody else got on their knees, and all four of us with whatever we had finally pushed this thing off to the side of the road. And while doing that, you can hear the old tree limbs on it start cracking and breaking because, you know, in order to roll it off, then that's what's going to happen. You're going to break these tree limbs. And after we were done, we looked back at what we did, and you can see all of the disturbed dirt that our knees caused with our feet. Because we were pushing, you know, with the leverage. So now there's a lot of disturbance left by pushing this thing, which before there was not. You know, so
right,
you know, okay. we're still totally tripping out on how that got from point A to point B. Okay, so the rest of the guys said, you know what, we're gonna walk in and start looking for footprints. And I said, fine, you know, I walked this thing yesterday, I'm still pooped. I'm going to get in the truck with Joe, and we're going to drive the rest of the way in. So I got in the passenger side, and we drove in. The rest of the guys are still walking, you know, behind us, about 50 yards behind us, really slowly looking, because that, you know, they look very carefully. And we get to the spot where our vehicles are at. I get out, and I start looking on the ground, because that's what you do. You know, we start looking on the ground for any disturbance, any footprints. I'm looking. I take a couple of glances at the vehicles really quick. You know, everything is still there. There's all the camping equipment hasn't been disturbed. You know, I'm looking on the floor, looking on the ground, nothing. And then I turn up and I look towards my truck on the driver's side, and that's when I seen, you know, this impressions on the passenger side window, driver's side, and on the driver's side window. And I'm looking at that. I'm about 30 feet away. And I'm getting closer, and then that's when I see a face on the passenger side window looking at me. And when I saw that, and then I looked at the driver's side window, and I saw, you know, the impressions there, and it felt like somebody, stalked me in the stomach, like, boom, like, whoa. And I got closer and closer, and I'm looking at this, and I'm going, okay, is this a bear? And that's in the back of my mind. Okay, is this a bear? I'm looking. Everybody's still walking in, right? Joe is, like, around his truck. So I'm the only one around the truck right now looking at it. And I start walking around my truck looking at it to see if there's any type of scratch marks, any other mud prints, anything like that on the truck. Nothing except for those two windows. And at that point in time, the rest of the guys are getting here, and I go, Jimmy, get over here now, because he was the one who was there with me yesterday who walked in to get my laptop with me. He came over, and I go, was this here yesterday? And he looked at it, and he goes, heck no. And he's looking at it, and he looked at me, and he's looking at it. And then finally, the rest of the guys get in here, and I wave them in, and I said, you guys look. And everybody's just totally tripping out. So I break out my iPhone, and I start videotaping it with my iPhone. And, you know, Alan starts, you know, he's going, this is cool, you know, and he gets his camera and he starts taking pictures. And I get my video camera, my JVC video camera, and I start taking video. And I look back there and I go, look at it, all the ice chests are still there. And at that point in time, Jimmy didn't realize that I had all kinds of food back there because he was still there yesterday, you know, with me when I got the waters. He said, he thought that's all I had was back there was waters and sodas. I go, Jimmy, look at all these ice chests, man. They're full of fried chicken, hot dogs, bologna, pastries, you know, loaves of bread, potato chips, beef jerky, apples, everything. And he told me, you mean this stuff did not get disturbed? And I go, no, look at everything is still where it was at. And he goes, then that's not a freaking bear. And I go, cause you have to understand, I go camping, but I'm not an avid camper, okay? And he's a Mr. Camper just like all the rest of the guys. And everybody says, man, he goes, one rule, when you go camping, you do not leave food out in the open because there are bears, period. I mean, that's the first thing that's just the golden rule. You do not leave food out in the open when you go camping. Park rangers will kick your butt for doing that because that attracts bears. So nothing was touched, man. All my food was still there. Nothing was touched. I had an open pastry, a six-pack of pastries open, 3-4 feet away from the face impression, tucked in the side of the bed, dude. Not even in an ice chest. So yeah. If a bear was there, he would have sniffed that out in a heartbeat, and my truck would have been dismantled. The tailgate would have probably been ripped off, and the ice chest and everything else would have been scattered all over the campsite. And it wasn't. There was no other physical evidence except for the impressions on both the windows. So, you know, you have to realize where we're at, why we go to this place. We have sightings all the time there, hundreds of footprints. There are a dime and a dozen for us now. The totality of the circumstances involving the logs and the trees pushing on the dirt road, the 12-inch footprint, you know, the food not being touched, and then what's looking at us right now on the driver's side and the passenger window. Now, the passenger window, like I said, it looked like a face. What we think happened is something leaned up against the passenger window and was looking inside and kind of smeared, but you can see the face, you can see the eye, and you can see the upper torso with the shoulder. Now, that's on the driver's side passenger window. On the driver's window, you have what seems to be something looking straight in with the face, leaving the lip, the lips, and the nostrils, and the middle part right above the lips type of deal. But what people have to realize that these lip marks are 8 inches long, and the nostrils are 6 inches long. So it's not like somebody's regular normal face like mine, you know, put their face against the window and left an impression. But then you have to think, too, that since I can remember, if I'm going to look in a window, I always put my hands together and look in the window. I don't physically put my whole face and smudge it against the window. You follow me?
Yeah, of course. You're not gonna smash your face on the window. I looked at that print on the window. It looks like there's kind of a nostril and maybe some lips, but it also looked like the face, if it was a face, kind of moved around a bit and smeared.
Yes, it did. As a matter of fact, on the left nostril, dripping from it looked like snot, like mucus. You know, there's actually a drip mark there. So, I mean, could that be, you know, mucus from whatever left it or just water? I don't know. But, you know, oh, and also, too, there are two handprints, okay? And I showed you the other day, you know, where that thumbprint. Now, we're getting a lot of slack on the Internet. Somebody actually went on a couple of websites and got a picture of a polar bear and put the polar bear and smudged it against the face of or the impression of the passenger window and put his paws up. But what a lot of people don't know is that the two handprints on the driver's side window, there's the fingers or knuckles that are on the glass, but on the door itself, there's thumbprints. Okay? So, you know, the last time I checked, bears didn't have, you know, thumbs, especially that came all the way down to the doors. So, you know, what I did is, on the videos now on YouTube, I went in there and put notations and, you know, put, you know, the little arrows and showing people, look, there are thumbprints down here. Bears don't have thumbprints. Sorry, you know. So
have you gotten any kind of comments on that about saying there were thumbprints and what the face looked like?
Well, you know, what's kind of funny is a couple of these websites that I went to or blogs that were just slamming me. And then when I finally went in and put links to the video and showed them the notation as a thumbprint, they stopped slapping me. Because, you know, if you don't know the whole story, then, yeah, I mean, you know, you're going to, I mean, I just, this morning was the first time I physically put the whole story on my website. You know, nobody knew the whole story on how it happened from very beginning to the very end. Again, they thought we went up there one night, you know, thinking that we were going to go find Bigfoot, a bunch of guys who didn't know what they were doing, and all of a sudden this happens to them. But until I put the story on, people are now coming to me and saying, whoa, you know, I didn't know all this happened. I'm going, well, yes, it did. And you know.
Jeffrey, you know, I was there. I looked at your pictures. Mm-hmm. I looked at the videos. They were, you know, to most people, I guess they'd be inconclusive but possibly compelling.
Right.
Sure. But the funny thing was that I checked a few websites and people were saying, well, this is all crap. All they want is money. It's like, did you actually watch the whole thing? The only time they asked for money was to do DNA testing. And they had to actually drag that out of your friend, what's his name, Burroughs. Or Burrow.
But see, you have to understand is that we weren't Rich Rodriguez from Fox News down here asked that question. And he goes, So he goes, what are you asking for, Jeff? And I basically told him, I said, we are asking for a DNA lab to come forward. And this DNA lab, though, has to have a database with DNA consisting of bear, mountain lion, monkey, baboon, and gorilla. So that way they can take what we have and see if they can map it to any one of those. Okay, that's the first thing we want to do. Okay, we don't have the money for that. And Rich Rodriguez said, well, how much would something like that cost? And then, and I give the mic to Mickey Burrows, who is the forensic expert for Fresno Police Department for 14 years.
Yeah.
And he said, probably over $5,000. So Rich took that as an assumption that we were asking for donations, which is bullcrap, because we never asked that. And then now it's out there that people are saying that, oh, well, see, all this is for money. They're asking for money, so they're trying to discredit us now because we're asking for money, which is bull crap. We are not asking for money. Now, if somebody comes forward and asks us to donate the money, then we're going to tell them, awesome, let me find a lab right now, and I want you to cut them the check or give them the cash.
Oh, okay.
No monies are going to go through us whatsoever.
Okay, Jeffrey, that was unclear to me. I thought you said, yes, we would like donations, but they're to do the DNA testing. Either donations or a lab that will donate its time and its material to do this.
Right. Now, yeah, to donate the lab and all that, obviously, yes, that's what we're looking for, free service, because obviously we don't have the money for it.
Right.
But, you know, as far as, you know, we don't want people to start throwing $20 here, $5 there, you know. No, of course not. You know, we don't want that. You know, we're not going to accept anything unless somebody comes forth and says, how much is it going to cost? And I call the lab, they say it's going to cost $7,500. Then I'm going to tell them it's going to cost $7,500. And they'll say, okay, I'll pay for it. Fine. I'll send them the check. Let's send them the DNA and let's do it. That's the way it's going to happen.
Okay, good. I mean, I'm glad that was cleared up because a lot of people were saying, well, it's just because of the money and that's all they want. And I said, well, they actually had to ask and pry that figure out of them. And
exactly.
not only were they not asking, you know, they were asking for donation. I thought you were asking for donations.
No, testing
only, not because you wanted them to throw them in an account and make money. It was just like, when we have enough money to do the testing, we'll do it.
Now, and then you have to understand, too, okay, you have a principal at a high school. Okay, the guy probably makes over $100,000, I'm thinking, a year. Okay. You have a correctional officer, vocational nurse, who makes good money. I work for AT&T Telephone. I make good money. Okay. But, you know, I'm still not going to go. We're still not going to go and fork up the money to do this. Sorry, because we have spent so already thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars already in our own equipment, our own valuable time, that, you know, for us to come up with more money, it's just, no, we're not going to do it. You know, we've already spent, you know, I've already spent probably, God, oh, my God, thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, you know, and I'm not going to go fork up any more money. You know, my time is valuable. You know, David's time is valuable. All the guys' time is valuable. I think what we're doing right now is good enough to where, you know, we've got the DNA. Okay, we have it. It's sitting right here. You know, if I win the lotto tomorrow, then of course I'm going to go get the DNA, you know, tested in a heartbeat. But, you know, I'm not going to go and spend, you know, $7,000 or $8,000 or $10,000 out of my own pocket to get the DNA tested.
So
I'm not.
The first question from a bunch of people was, you spent all this money on all this equipment and your partners did too, but
right.
The first thing they're going to say is, well, why can't you all, I mean, you're 99% of the way there, supposedly.
Right.
What is it? Why isn't it worth it to you to all cuff up, like, you know, $1,000 a piece to do it?
Well, good question. It's right now with the economy going, you know, it's really hard. You know, you have to remember all this stuff that I have spent in the past for electronics and computers and security cameras. I didn't go all buy at one time. You know, this has been accumulating over the past 6 or 7 years.
Uh-huh.
You know, so, you know, I've worked a lot of overtime hours, all that kind of stuff, and it's, you know, I'm pretty much, you know, done spending money. You know, it is. You know, I've got so much time and energy invested into this. You know, I'd rather do this the correct way. And to be honest, if someone comes forward and offers us the money to do this, I'm going to ask them, you know what, could you also get money so we can do lie detector tests? Because we all want to take lie detector tests as well. So, you know, it's, you know, I would love to, you know, to come up with $7,000 right now, but I'm hurting for money big time. You know, with the economy and, you know, right now AT&T's hours are cutting back on hours, and it's just no way. And there's no way I can come up with that type of money. And all the other guys too. You know, Alan Thomas, he doesn't have a job. You know, he's disabled. You know, Jimmy, who came down with us, you know, he was only down there for a little bit, so, you know, there's no reason why we're going to ask him for money.
Right.
You know, David Ragosa, yes, he's a high school principal, and, you know, I'm pretty sure he makes good money, but, you know, he has a family, he has a mortgage, he also has, you know, he has two young kids, and he has some older kids in college. So, you know, it's, you know, people think it's easy to come up with $1,000, $2,000 here and there, but, you know, I need to pay my mortgage, I need to pay, you know, electric, just like you. You know, everybody has bills.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, yeah, so when I want to go and buy a piece of equipment, you know, I have to save up 2 or 3 months for me to do that, 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
And you know, and that's just for one piece of equipment. So, so everybody, you know, when everybody sees what I have, they think I went out and bought it all at one chunk. Hell no. You know, I've been doing this 6 years. So, you know, a lot of overtime hours too, you know, the weekends and 10-hour days, 11-hour days to buy some of the stuff.
Right. Well, the other thing that people forget is, and if you, and you will know this and know this from other people that have done anything that they wanted to do, be it a paranormal investigation or, you know, riding motorcycles out in the desert or whatever.
Sure.
Like you just said, you have a family.
Right.
And these people do. And, you know, your wife or somebody in your family might say, well, we need to get this first before you start throwing money at whatever it is.
Absolutely.
So, I have that with certain things I do, too. But, you know,
yeah.
You live with it. Okay,
right.
That's all I wanted to ask, because I'd seen people say,
sure,
they have all this equipment, why can't they just pony up for the testing?
I wish it was that easy.
Yeah, well, I wish it was too. Another question I had, and I think I asked you when I was there, was if you do have a DNA sample off this door, there'll probably be DNA samples from about, you know, anywhere from 2 or 3 to 20 or 30 different types of DNA sitting on that window.
Right.
How do you determine, and I guess Mr. Burrow would know this, how do you determine which one might be the how do you find the one that's supposedly the anomalous one?
When when he looked at the impressions, now actually, okay, I didn't finish the whole story. Now, when we came down on that wind, yeah, no, we got off on a different track, which is fine. But when we got, after we found the impressions on the windows, David finally got his he switched out the batteries and his Jeep started right up, and he said, "Dude, let's go before my Jeep dies, because I have two brand new batteries and they got to get me down the hill to a mechanic." So we said, "Cool, let's go." So, at that point in time, the thing in my brain right now is I got to get my truck out of there right now. Granted, I had these two awesome impressions on my window, but what am I supposed to do? I can't take the windows off right there and then. I can't roll them down, because if I do, I'm afraid I'm going to smear them. I can't throw blankets on stuff on them or whatever, because, if I'm driving down the hill, they're going to fly off. So what am I supposed to do? I can't do anything. So, we get in our vehicles and we headed out, obviously in my truck. Again, I don't have a 4x4, so I'm going through the mud. My tires are spinning. There's mud flying everywhere, and I'm looking at my windows. And I'm going, please, 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 try to keep that mud off my windows. And I'm trying to, not really, hit the tires, to really spin them that bad. So, but there was still mud flying all over the place. There was nothing I can do because I had to get out of there. So we finally got out of there. I busted the bead on one of my tires because, I had to ram one of the holes really hard to where it knocked it out and some of the air came loose. Luckily, we have air compressors, but I tried putting air in it, and it just kept leaking because of all the mud got in between the tire and the rim, and it didn't want to seal. So I had to take that off. I had to put another spare on, and finally got out of there, made it down, on the way down, I come to a location called Squaw Valley, and that's where I finally got cell service. So, I'm thinking in my brain on the way down there, okay, what am I going to do about the impressions? What do I do? What do I do? The first thing that hit me was call Mickey Burrow. Mickey is a friend of ours. He came to know David a couple of years ago, and that's how I met him. He is a forensic expert with the Fresno Police Department, has been for 14 years. He's the one who drives the white van when there's a murder. They call him out. He comes out, and he locates all the evidence. He takes DNA swabs, takes pictures of the dead body, fingerprints. He does all that. So this guy knows his stuff. So I call him, and also, Mickey Burles is also a paranormal investigator on the side as well. You can go ahead and Google his name, Mickey Burrow, B-U-R-R-O-W, and he has a website out there. Go take a look at his credentials. The guy is a god when it comes to photography expert and everything else. So, of course, he's the first person I'm going to call. And I did. I called him, and I told him what I had on my windows, and he was intrigued. And I told him, could you meet me today after work? And he says, okay, I get off work at 6, and then I'll come to your house, and I'll, take pictures and swap for DNA. And I said, very cool. Well, he called me that afternoon about 5 o'clock, and he says, Jeff, guess what? I go, what? He goes, there's been a stabbing at Fresno State. I got to go over there. And I'm all, crap. So, that's the life of Mickey Burrow, okay? When the chief calls him to go to a crime scene, he's got to go. So I'm going, damn it. So I told my wife, pull your car out of the garage. I'm putting my truck in there. So I did. But the following morning, I had to go to work. So I drove my truck to work. There's nothing I can do, okay? I mean, I have to go to work, dude. What am I supposed to do? Put blankets over it and tape it all up? Yeah, a cop is going to pull me over in a heartbeat. And what is he going to say? Why is your windows covering? Officer, I got the picture of Bigfoot. Yeah, he'll probably test me for fucking drugs and everything else. So,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I drove to work. Luckily, I didn't work that far, okay? But I drove to work 30 miles an hour. But it was funny that all that grime and grease and dirt from the impressions were still there, okay? Sure, some of it came off, but you can still see everything really good. So Mickey called me on Thursday afternoon and told me, Jeff, I can come over after work and do the DNA test and take pictures for you. And I said, well, I'm at work today. Could you come over to the parking lot and do it there? And he said, sure. So after work, I met him in the parking lot. He came over, and that's where he did all the stuff. Right there, he took pictures and swabbed for DNA, and he gave me the DNA samples I bought this stuff on the internet where, you know, I thought in case one of these days, you know, I might need it to where, you know, I need to take DNA samples. So there are Q-tips where after you do the swabbing, you put them in these like test tube thingies and you seal them and boom, yeah. They're ready to go.
Yeah.
And so I gave them to him and he did his swabbing, and it was kind of funny is he looked at the windows and he went straight for the lips and straight for the nostrils. Like he knew what they were, you know, like I said, he knows what lip prints are and, you know, nose and, you know, I didn't ask him why he went for it, but he went for the lips first and he swabbed there and he swabbed at the nostrils and all that area. So, you know, to me, I'm thinking, okay, the guy is looking at something that I'm looking at too, and that's like the facial features of something. So he finished taking the pictures. I said, cool, man, thank you very much. So I go home, and then my buddy called me, and because he heard about what happened, and you know, he's a big skeptic, you know, and he goes, you know what, send me the pictures, let me see. So I text over the impressions, and I didn't hear from him for about 20 minutes, and then he text me back and he goes, Jeff, the world of windows right now. I'm going on my truck. He goes, you idiot, take them off right now. And I'm going, dude, I got to go to work tomorrow. And, you know, you have to understand, Greg, is that, you know, I have, you know, what we believe are, you know, the impressions of Sasquatch on our windows, but it never occurred to me to take the windows off and have them preserved. And he pretty much yelled at me on the phone. He says, dude, he goes, that could be the golden ticket right there. You need to take those freaking windows off now. And I'm thinking to myself, holy crap. So the next morning, I called my supervisor, and I told him, you know, this is what happened, and could you please give me 2 hours off in the morning so I can go to a window place and have the windows removed. So that's what happened. Friday morning comes around. I go up. Alan Thomas happens to have relatives who own a window place. I took my window, he met me there, and I had both windows removed, put new windows back on, and right now I have the windows right now preserved at an undisclosed location. The climate is set at around 70 degrees, and it's wrapped in butcher paper because Mickey Burrell told me to do this. He said, I go, how do you preserve these windows? And when I called him, he started laughing. He goes, dude, that's a awesome job you did that. He goes, you know, I didn't want to tell you you had to go spend $250, $300 to do that, but you did that very smart. So, and the people have to realize I just spent almost $300 replacing two windows, okay? So I've got the windows off. So right now I have two windows full of DNA, okay? So they're at our disposal for now and forever. I even told them, I go, if I preserve this correctly, how long will this DNA stay there for? And he goes, forever. Because, you know, you can go back for a blood stain years and years and years later, right, and get great DNA. Uh-huh. So he goes, what you got in your windows right now, they'll, if you keep them there forever and not, you know, wash them or do whatever, you know, you got DNA forever. So, like I said, I've got the windows preserved right now. It's not like, you know, people were saying, oh, since he used his iPhone, he used a nap. And or else he photoshopped them. Well, I've got my windows to prove it. You know, I still have them. And you know, when in, you know, one of these days, if you come over to go Bigfoot hunting, dude, I'll show you the windows.
Yeah, well, when we were there, actually, Skylar and I, you said if you want to come out and see the area where this happened, we said, yeah, we'll do it. I'll do it in a heartbeat. I've got camping equipment. I've got everything. I go hiking all the time. I'm fine with that.
Sweet, yeah, and it looks like we'll probably let you know here pretty soon when that's going to happen. So,
well, excellent. People don't know. Well, they do if they looked at the site. Did you look at the radio show site there, Jeffrey?
Yeah, your homepage.
Yeah. Okay,
yeah,
because I all the news media left, and after they did, I said, hey, Jeffrey, can we go out and take a picture in front of the truck? He said, yes, so we went out there. And then he showed me where these thumbprints and things were, which may look like thumbprints, I guess. But he also, one thing I noticed that was kind of funny is he hasn't washed the truck since then.
No, I didn't.
How long is it going to be before you wash that truck? It's been, what, a month now?
Yeah,
it didn't,
you know,
look
what?
too bad, but...
I still haven't washed it, man. Because I've been so freaking busy. You know, that truck has been through a lot, and the only place I take that truck is from home to work, work to home to work to home.
Right.
That's it, you know, and sure, I'll go up to the mountains, but I just haven't had the time to wash it. Maybe I'll do it. I don't know. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow. I don't know. But no, the mud is. As a matter of fact, I had the tire fixed yesterday. So I got my tire back on there, and I got the spare put underneath. So, but no, I'm a busy person, man. I mean, it's like sometimes I work 10, 11 hours at AT&T. So right afterwards, and, you know, Fresno is not like L.A. Fresno right now is up in the 90s. Matter of fact, during that press conference time, we were at 106, 105 almost right before you guys got here. So,
yeah, I noticed.
So the last thing I want to do is I want to go out and wash my truck or sit at some place and have somebody wash it for me. Screw it, dude. There's mud on the tires. Big deal. I'm going home.
Right. Well, then it's a working truck. I mean,
it's a working truck.
You notice that when you see it.
Yeah.
Well, about the DNA samples, if you do test them and there's something anomalous in there, I know, and you mentioned actually at the press conference, that
right.
other people had tested hair and other things and found some things that were possibly anomalous in them, but they couldn't tell if it was mixed with human DNA or if it was some sort of new DNA. If you get this tested, do you think this is going to be any different, or you just want to take the chance that it would be?
Well, what I want to do first, like I specified at the press conference, is I want to rule out the possibilities first. I want to make sure it's not a bear, a monkey, a mountain lion, all that. Once we eliminate those possibilities, okay, then they'll be able to tell me right there and then, okay, is it human? If they say, well, no, not exactly, it's not human, okay, it's not any one of these five that we just wanted to have tested, and it's not human, okay, now we're getting someplace. At that point in time, then we might call, or I might call, a Bigfoot organization that have other types of Sasquatch hair samples or DNA samples that now we can compare. But at that point in time, you know, I'm going to make an announcement to everybody and their mother and say, okay, this is what happened, this is what just happened. You know, we'll have the DNA lab in front of the camera specifying, you know, it's not one of these and it's not human. We have no clue what it is. Because there's one thing you cannot do is you cannot fake DNA. Okay? You cannot make up a DNA. You cannot fake it. You cannot make it up. Okay?
All right.
When it comes back saying that it's not any one of these animals and it's not human, then everybody's ears are pretty much going to be at attention now. And they're going to go, what?
Yeah, but my point was, I think that this has been done before with hair and things like that, and they found things that were not human and not an unknown animal. But it seems like past the Bigfoot research community and people like you and I and some of our listeners, nobody really cares. And I don't know why that is. Probably because they just need something really dramatic, like a dead body or something.
Yeah, and they keep it to themselves. You know, people, they need to come out. Yeah, good question. You know, I don't know why they don't make a big deal about it. Is it what they have a fact? You know, somebody could go out there and say, we've got DNA of something that isn't here. Well, then make a news conference and bring up a DNA lab, a scientist or doctor, whoever tested this, and have them say it right there in front of millions of people. Why don't they do that?
I don't know. How competitive is the Bigfoot research community? I know that the UFO people are quite competitive, and they don't share information with each other.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Bigfoot, I mean, if I had an unknown species of DNA, and obviously, you know, now people know of the impressions on the windows, we're talking major find. Okay? Now, why don't they come forward, these other Bigfoot organizations, and say that we have come across a DNA sample that does not make any, that does not register with any type of animal living on the database? Why don't they come forward and do that? I don't know.
Oh, I thought they had. I thought I'd seen something about that on Monster Hunters or whatever that show is.
Yeah, you know what? In order to really, I mean, because people aren't going to believe it,
right?
Unless they see it for themselves. I can tell you, I saw a ghost last week.
Right, right.
You know, okay. Well, then show me a picture. Well, okay. The only thing that you're going to be able to do for something like that to prove to the world that, ladies and gentlemen, this Bigfoot organization has now found and give a location, give a pictures of the location, how did they get it, you know, give a whole full story, put it in front of the TV, have a lab scientist up there in a white jacket, putting everything up on the screen, and then pointing out, this, not this, not this, not this, not this, not human. Ladies and gentlemen, what we just have tested does not belong to anything we have ever known. Okay? If you would do that, it would make the news, it would be in every single news media throughout the world. Okay? But why haven't they done that?
Uh-huh. Okay? I don't know. Maybe because it's just not conclusive. Nothing they have is conclusive.
Maybe they don't have it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because like you just said, it is very competitive. That's one of the reasons why we were getting hit by so many Bigfoot organizations saying, we'll do the testing for you. Just send us the DNA. Are you kidding me? Do you think I'm going to send you DNA for what we think, you know, is a Sasquatch, and all of a sudden you might come back and say, I'm sorry, it's a bear. You follow me?
Yes, you know, I know exactly what you're saying. How do you know that their intentions are pure?
Exactly. Exactly. How do you know they're not going to keep that for themselves and just tell me right off the bat, sorry, no, it's a bear. Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
They could do that, but you've got plenty of DNA off that door, though, don't you?
Well, true, but I'm not going to give them, you know, years and years and years of work and trouble that we've gone to for, you know, just to go give them that. I'm not going to give that for free. There's no way.
Okay. You bring up something I wanted to ask you about. What kind of calls have you gotten since this thing, besides from the Bigfoot organizations? Have people called offering you money? Have they called saying you're a big liar or anything?
I've gotten two calls already from that TV show Finding Bigfoot. Okay. And
you got one while I was standing there, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. What the hell is that coming from? Oh, hold on. Let me silence this. Sorry.
Okay.
It's my 24-hour UFO hotline going off.
There could be a huge UFO thing going on right now.
You want me to answer it?
Yeah, go ahead and answer. It might be something good.
Hello, it's Jeffrey. Staying in paranormal. Yeah.
Yeah, we might have to cut the interview short if there's a sighting going on right this minute.
Are they just planes, you think? Hold on.
Sure, I'll wait.
I'm going to put this caller on speakerphone.
Okay, I'd like to hear it.
All right, go ahead, Rob. What do you see? Describe it to me. Are you getting my video right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, do me a favor. As soon as you do that, put them on YouTube like you usually do and send me a link.
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay. All right, cool. I'm on the radio right now doing an interview, so that's awesome that you called me right now. It's kind of funny. Go ahead and, like I said, go ahead and videotape it like you're doing right now, and then send me a link when you're done, okay? Okay, thanks, man.
Sure.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Hey, that's funny. And that, my friend, is real. He's a sky watcher out here in Fresno. And a lot of the stuff that you see on my website, this guy has gotten. This guy, he's disabled. And he doesn't work. And at nighttime, he'll go out like at about 7 o'clock, and he'll kick it until 5 o'clock in the morning and just videotape all freaking night. And this guy has gotten pretty much 75% of the sightings on my website. It's from him. As a matter of fact, the Battle of Los Angeles movie used one of his clips on the trailer for the movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they paid him like $1,000 4 seconds of film.
Well, that's good. That ought to help with his research. Here's a very personal peeve. Do you ask him to use a tripod?
He does, and you know what? Everybody gets upset at Robert because he doesn't use tripods because he lives in a neighborhood where it's surrounded by trees. So when he's videotaped something and he goes from behind a tree, it's hard for him to get the tripod and start running with it. And then, you know, either what he does a lot of times too is he'll climb on top of the roof of his house. But this guy has been doing this for 4 years, 5 years now, and he's pretty good at zooming in without using a tripod. I mean, the guy is now an expert at videotaping without using a tripod. But you're right. He gets a lot of criticism because he doesn't use a tripod. But, he's videotaping something, and all of a sudden he starts running, or it'll start shaking. And on the comments on YouTube, they'll say, "Dude, where's your tripod? Here, I'll send you money. Go buy a tripod," you know. It's kind of funny, but, you know.
You can get very light ones. You can get ones that weigh, like, less than a pound.
And you're right. But it's just for him to it's hard. It's really hard. And I know what you're saying. But, sometimes when I'm out Bigfoot hunting, too, and, you know, a lot of people say a lot of the stuff that David has on video, it's shaking and stuff like that. But you have to understand is that, you know, you can't really take a tripod everywhere you go. You just can't. You know, that's just the way it goes. You cannot take a tripod anywhere. Now, if you were, you know, looking at one direction and you can set up the tripod and hit record and just leave it, it's a different story.
Yeah.
But when you're looking 360 around the skies and, you know, and all of a sudden you see this object and it goes from behind a tree, and then now you have to run 30 yards, 40 yards, running and filming at the same time, you know, there's no way you can do it with a tripod. So you have to have this thing on your hand.
I know how I can get rich. All I have to do is invent a telescoping monopod that you can hit a button and the thing drops down and locks. So you can
do it and I'll be the first one to buy one.
The first thing people said when I said I was going to go to this your news conference there on last Thursday was, well, not the first thing, but a lot of people said, "Oh God, here we go again." So that's another question I wanted to ask you. How did the Biscardi hoax from 2008 affect everything, and how did it affect you?
For one thing, it made the whole press conference out to be a joke. I mean, that's the way everybody took it. And I was offended because, you know, you have a principal at a high school, you have a nurse, you have an AT&T employee. You know, we're not going to come out and make fools of ourselves unless we know what we have is genuine. Okay? You know, what's kind of cool, though, right now is on the Internet, people are finally coming out and saying, you know what, we don't think these guys hoaxed it, but, you know, we don't know if this thing on the window is a Bigfoot. Everybody's pretty much saying, you know what, we think it's a bear. It's a bear. It's a bear. But at least they're giving us the benefit of the doubt and saying, you know, I don't think these guys hoaxed it. You know, that's what everybody is saying right now, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, which is awesome. But a lot of people are still saying that it's a bear without knowing the totality of the circumstances that surrounded this whole event that weekend.
Well, this goes on in Bigfoot research. It goes on with ghosts. It goes on with UFOs.
Yeah.
As soon as somebody has an idea about something, they say that's what it is. And fine,
right.
It works if you don't consider all the evidence that is around whatever they're considering. 99% of the time, they say, well, it's nothing but they've left out, you know, half or more of the circumstances and the facts surrounding the case.
Exactly.
And it's very easy to shoot something down when you don't consider most of the facts around it. I'm not saying I completely believe that this is a UFO, right? That this is a Bigfoot that was near your truck. I do not know. I would like to find out, and that's why I wanted to have you on the show. One, because you seemed honest. Two, because you've been doing this for a long time. And three, which we can get into in the last half hour here, is that you're into all kinds of other paranormal stuff Yes. Just like I am. You mentioned at the beginning of, and I wish you so much good luck with that, with the, getting that thing tested. I hope something turns out. The beginning of the show, you said that you were the section director for MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, up there in Northern California, near Fresno in Sanger. But you said that they had said you couldn't talk about any of your cases in the media anymore. Did that happen when Bigelow basically took over the organization?
No, Bigelow was already involved, and so when I started this was when I started my radio show, because this was like a week before the radio show is when I quit, and I think I'm trying to remember. So this just recently, we're talking like maybe 2 months now. We're going on a month and a half, maybe 2 months, is when I quit MUFON. And to be honest, I'm going to tell you right off the bat is that they were not happy on how I was doing my investigations. And what I mean by that is because when I investigate something, Greg, is that I go all out. And I mean, I'll call the people. I will go to their house. I will do a thorough investigation. And what you see on my website from these, you know, weird objects flying through the skies, is because I've actually done my homework, and these people are now shooting video for me, and there's weird stuff happening over Fresno, and I'm getting a lot of good stuff that it's pissing these guys off. It's pissing MUFON off because I'm getting a lot of good stuff on video, and they're not getting that stuff, period. Okay? So I knew right off the bat when I started getting a lot of great video. And these people, I have sky watchers now all over Fresno, okay? I have a 24-hour UFO hotline, okay? You know, MUFON doesn't even have, well, I don't know if they even have one, but, you know, their investigators don't have 24-hour UFO hotlines, okay? I got Fresno Police Department calling me and letting me know they see weird stuff in over the skies of Fresno, okay? They don't have police departments in their area calling their investigators. Why? Because I go out and I do my homework. I let people know who I am, and I get a lot of action in Fresno because now I have people who know who I am and who trust me. And because I'm getting all this stuff happening and a lot of video, it's making them look bad. Because I'm doing all this, I could have been doing this without MUFON, without being a member of MUFON. You understand?
Right. Yeah.
And so they're, you know, there's these guys from MUFON who've been doing this for years and years and years, and how they investigate is they call somebody up on the phone, and they'll ask them questions, fill out the report, and turn it in, and that's it. Not me. You know, I'll call up the customer, or not the customer, but the witness, the witness, and I'll get their story, and I'll say, hey, do you mind if I could come over and talk to you in person, get you know, testimony from the witnesses, and I'll do that, and I'll go and I'll look at the area, and you know, I go out and beyond what I think a lot of investigators do, and that's and I think that ticks them off, okay, you know, so okay, so what, you know, I'm doing what I love to do and I'm doing it right, and you know, and I think it's pissing these guys off, to be honest, you know, and I think that's what happened. So when I told them I was going to go on the air and do the show and use MUFON cases, they said, no, we're not going to have you do that. Because I think, you know, they have their own radio station, you know, Roger Marsh has a show called, which is kind of funny, what is it, UFO Central or MUFON Central.
Now, what's
kind of funny is that my show, before they had their show, was called Paranormal Central, okay, and that's actually what I've been calling, you know, my radio show since I don't know, 6 years now. Before I had this show, and it was Paranormal Central, and then now all of a sudden they start their show, and now it's called MUFON Central. You know, that's kind of weird, but you know, like I said, you know, they advised me, sorry, do not talk about any other cases, or I couldn't even talk about, you know, a MUFON report or anything like that. So I said, you know what, if that's the way you guys are going to be, see ya, I'm gone. And I've actually gotten a lot of, I've gained a lot of respect from people for me doing that. Because, you know, rumors have been going around, and you probably heard them as well, that MUFON has been said to be sort of kind of, you know,
compromised?
Kind of like, what?
Compromised?
That they've been working with the government and trying to silence a lot of the stuff that's been going out there. So, and you know, a lot of people told me that that's what MUFON was, an organization to try to suppress a lot of the information out there. And I didn't believe that. You know, I figured,
well,
you know what?
I still don't believe it, Jeffrey. I just believe that certain people have agendas, and if they don't agree with it, I've run into this when somebody doesn't agree with what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't wait for this to happen. They start accusing me of working for the government because they don't agree with what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
You know, and so I don't know. Maybe there's some influence.
Right.
Of course, NICAP was basically closed down because there were so many government people on it. They got everybody fighting with each other, and it that's not hard. But it was definitely infiltrated by the government at the time. And
right.
I'm not sure exactly why they did it. I suppose it's because they were just making too much noise and... now I can't remember. Kehoe was probably just pissing too many people off. I don't know.
Right. Well, again, you know, I after quitting MUFON, you know, a lot of people, you know, said that probably was one of my best moves that I've done by doing that. And I said, well, you know, I had to do it because, you know, I want to do the show and I want to be honest and, you know, I want to talk about everything paranormal. And if I'm going to do that, then I need to talk about UFOs as well. So. I said, see ya, I'm done, and that was the end of the MUFON. So there you go. I still do, you know, UFO. I don't really need MUFON because now my name is out there, and, you know, with my 24-hour hotline, I get calls all the time, especially early morning hours. And my wife hates it because I have the cell phone on the side of the desk, on the side of the end table, and
yeah.
at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, it rings, and, you know, I have to get it up really quick and run into the closet and answer it, and because, you know, my wife's a school teacher, so she needs her sleep, but she gets frustrated sometimes because, you know, sometimes my phone will ring off the hook. I mean, there'll be occasions where I remember one night we were at 7 o'clock, we were watching, Two and a Half Men, as a matter of fact, I remember what we were watching.
Yeah.
And my phone rang, and it was a sergeant from the Fresno Police Department, and he was telling me, Jeff, so-and-so from, you know, Fresno PD, I'm just letting you know there's something floating on top of River Park right now, and I just wanted to let you know. And I said, okay, cool, thanks. And what River Park is, it's our upscale shopping center north of Fresno.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, 5 minutes later, I get another call from River Park, and some guy who works out there told me that, hey, there's something floating above River Park right now, and it's just sitting there. And I thought that was awesome, and I got another call telling me the same thing. And right after I hung up that call, we have the Fresno at the Fresno Yosemite National Airport. We have the National Guard here, and it just so happens that we have the 144th Fighter Wing here stationed in Fresno, and they happen to be the National Guard, and they handle all the West Coast, and they're controlled by NORAD. These jets are constantly flying out of here all the time. A lot of times they'll go up to China Lake and do some bombing exercises, but
yeah.
A lot of times they will fly out of here during the nighttime, the wee hour of the mornings. And the only reason I can think is that, you know, they've been dispatched for a reason. Now, after that third call came in, that one day, you know, when the River Park incident, these jets take off. About five of them, and me and my wife start hearing them because we can hear when the jets take off, and they're loud.
Yeah.
And they take off, and we're going, whoa, you know, the jets are taking off out of here like crazy. And then not more than 15 minutes later, guess who calls? The guy who just called me right now on the phone, Robert Thorson. He called me. He goes, Jeff. I go, what? He goes, I just saw this weird thing flying north of Fresno, and then all of a sudden, the jets started chasing it. I'm going, what? He goes, yeah, and I got it on video. I'm going, sweet. So anybody can go to Robert Thorson. He's actually called King UFO Kid on YouTube. That's his name, King UFO Kid.
Okay.
Into YouTube, and he has hundreds of videos, and there's a couple of them on there that you're just gonna have to go through every single one of them, to where he's following this light, like two or three lights. Actually, he's had three different videos of one a triangle, a couple of them just regular orbs, and then all of a sudden these jets come out of nowhere chasing it, and he got them on video. I mean, they're awesome, dude.
No, it sounds like excellent stuff.
Oh, yeah, and there's a lot of that stuff happening here in Fresno, so That's why I'm constantly busy.
I got another question from a listener, and I was going to ask this question, too, because it's an interest of mine, because the Bigfoot people and the UFO people, the researchers, they can't stand each other, for the most part. And I know you are investigating, obviously, both kinds of phenomena.
Yeah.
Now, there are not a small number, actually, of reports of Bigfoot and UFO phenomena occurring in the same place at the same time. I wanted to know how you felt about that and what your ideas are about that, because you've been looking at it for such a long time.
If you go to my website, SangerParanormalSociety.com, and go to the Bigfoot link, okay, the incident in 2009 that, you know, where we got that Bigfoot up there in the same place, there are a montage of pictures that I have on there of the area where we went, and we took different pictures of the location, compared the height with me and the spot and all that. David Regosa, on his game camera, now you have to remember, this is the forest, okay? We have redwoods going up 150 feet tall. You know, we're talking tall, 100 feet, 150 feet. That on his game camera, he has gotten at like 2 o'clock in the morning, 12 o'clock in the morning, these weird lights flashing or coming from the bottom. As a matter of fact, they're on my website right now. If you go to Bigfoot, the Bigfoot link, Sang Paranormal, hit the Bigfoot link, and then that's going to actually, the first page comes up is going to be the new story on the Bigfoot and the impressions.
Right.
Scroll all the way down, hit the next button. That'll take you to the next page. Then you're going to have, at the very top, you're going to have the picture of the Bigfoot that we got. Okay, click onto that. Sorry, but click onto that, and that'll take you to another page, which now, if you scroll down to the very bottom, you're going to have a wide variety of different pictures that we took during that day to try to debunk the Bigfoot. But we have also three photographs at the very bottom that are these weird lights coming from the top, shining downward. And we're going, and David gave these to us, and he goes, check this out, Jeff. And he goes, you know, this is in the middle of nowhere, okay?
Mm-hmm. He told me about this. I was talking to him about this.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, they're not helicopters, okay? It's not somebody with a headlamp on their head, because you have to remember, this is in the middle of freaking nowhere. Nobody in their right mind is going to be up at 12 o'clock in the morning walking around in the middle of freaking nowhere. And, you know, we don't know what these things are. But there you can plainly see these three lights projecting down, some type of orb or with some aura involved. I don't know. Weird stuff, man. Weird freaking stuff. Now, am I saying this is a UFO? No, I'm not. Now, actually, an unidentified flying object? No. You know, a lot of people are saying, well, it's the moon. No, it's not the moon, right, you know, 5 feet off the ground. No, it's not the moon. You know, I don't know. We have had a lot of UFO sightings up in the Sierras. A lot of them. So, I know your question is the UFO phenomena somehow connected with the Bigfoot phenomena? I don't know. You know, you get a lot of people saying they are possibly extraterrestrials from another planet. What I'm going to tell you right now are what I've been hearing out in the internet. Some people say that they were brought in by, you know, flying saucers and left down here. They're the pets of aliens. I mean, you can go on for a long time and just listen to all this stuff on the internet.
Yeah, but the fact does remain that there's, you know, a few cases, not just a few, but quite a few where the two phenomena are within the same vicinity, which makes you start thinking there's got to be some kind of strange connection here. I don't know if it's
a
connection from us or connection from some doorway that opens up, or who knows?
Yeah, no, and I think you're exactly right. Also, too, there's speculation that the military is doing some top secret, experiments, and these could be actual different types of aliens. I don't know, but I have heard that to where the two type of phenomena are interconnected somehow. I couldn't give you an answer. I've heard so many stories. The only incident that have occurred that has brought to my attention to where these two are interconnected somehow are the lights David got on the camera,
right,
on a motion sensor camera, and the same location where all the stuff is happening in the Bigfoot area.
I've got this strange feeling that there's a lot of things going on with both the Bigfoot and the UFO and the haunting paranormal communities, mm-hmm, where they see phenomena outside of their field of expertise or whatever they're looking at, and they probably ignore it and they don't tell anybody about it because they think it makes them look strange, which is so strange because most people think all those people are strange,
right?
But the fact that they're not sharing the information with each other and saying, look, I don't know why there's a Bigfoot here, but there's also this family's had Bigfoot around their house, but then they're also having poltergeist phenomena. Why is that?
Absolutely.
And that's happened more than once too.
Yes. And you're totally right. There's, especially in the central San Joaquin Valley where I live, and that's one of the reasons why I started this, is because there are a lot of strange things happening, and I don't know why it is, Greg. I have no clue. Hopefully one of these days we will know, but there's just so much paranormal activity happening now, and I think it's getting stronger for some reason. I've been getting a lot more of UFO cases, a lot of more unidentified flying objects, a lot of more Bigfoot sightings. It's just a lot of this phenomena is increased in sightings, and I have no idea why, no clue. But it's keeping me busy, it's keeping my team busy, which is awesome because this is like a candy store. It's like, I love it. It would be boring if, I got a call every year, but that's not the case. I get calls from Robert all the time. I get calls from people all the time about UFOs, and David keeps me going with the Bigfoot community thing, and I get calls from people having poltergeist in their homes and wanting to ask questions, or can you bring your psychic down and please find out what's going on in my home? And so it's like, we're not going out looking for this stuff. People are actually calling my 24-hour hotline and giving me, cases left and right, which is awesome for us. So
yeah, well, it also might be a reporting artifact for, one, communication's better. Two, there's more people moving into different areas. And three, people might be a little less embarrassed, I guess, to bring it up or have somebody come out and look at it. That might be contributing to why we hear so much about these things more and more. I don't know. Maybe there is more of it, but
well, and I think you're right. And people, when they call me, they had no idea I existed. But I've been trying to get my name out there as much as I can. And people finally will call me and said, "Man, I didn't know you guys were around. I would have called you a long time ago."
Huh.
So these things are happening all over the place. And people have no idea who to call, who to turn to, in fear that, like you said, they're going to get ridiculed, or they just are afraid to. They have no clue, I'm here to try to answer questions that I have, and I'm trying to help people because, people think that their house is haunted, and we'll go in and we'll find out, I'm sorry, but what you're hearing in the kitchen is this pipe behind the refrigerator going off at 3 in the morning for some reason. And they're so relieved beyond words because they're scared to death. Once we tell them that, you have nothing to worry about, we're here also to help people. We love what we do, and we're helping people at the same time. And while we're doing that, we're trying to figure out what the hell is going on in the skies, and what in the heck is running around the mountains of the Sierra National Forest. And you know, it just, it's awesome that so many things are coming out now. And again, it's because people are seeing us and hearing about us on the media, and people by word of mouth, by Facebook, the internet. But you know, there's just so much of the stuff going on out there, and it's awesome. And you know, you probably hear it too. It's just that, you know, the phenomena thing, it's just incredible. You know, a lot of UFOs out there now. It's wild. You know, is it because maybe we're getting closer to 2012 and something is happening? I don't know. Are the doors opening up out there? Good possibility.
Yeah. We've got about 5 minutes left here, and sometimes the show after me comes in on time, so we might have to cut it off. Sometimes
okay.
They don't. I had two divergent questions here, which aren't really related to each other. One would take a little bit longer to answer, and I'm going to give you a choice to answer one of these two, but if the one that takes longer to answer, you probably have to hurry it up.
Okay.
The longer answer question, and wait till I ask both, is what's the strangest case that you've investigated? And the second one was, what would you do if all these mysteries were solved? I mean, what if there were answers for all these things?
Oh, man.
Pick one of those, or answer both of them. I don't know. You have five minutes.
The strangest case that I have ever been on.
Well, just strange to you. I mean, not where somebody would say, oh, you know, that's so weird, but something just, you know, that was strange and affected strangely,
okay, the strangest one is when I had a call from north of Fresno, and it was a Saturday night. And matter of fact, this is on the UFO page of my website.
Okay.
That this guy called me, and he says, Jeff. He goes, this is Jeffrey, right? I go, yeah. I go, a triangle just crashed on the side of the mountain over here by Fresno.
Oh, yeah, that one.
That one. Now, what's weird about that one is that in the process of investigating that area, because when this triangle hit the side of the mountain, we had vehicles ascending onto the site within 5 minutes. And this is north of Fresno, away from a military base. So when these vehicles started ascending onto this location within 5 minutes and dropping off people trying to get this thing started up again to get it out of there, you know, that was telling me that there's something going on north of Fresno. So by going and snooping around, we find what to me seems to be ancient ruins of either Inca or Mayan. If you go to YouTube right now, people, and type in ancient ruins north of Fresno, go check out what I found north of Fresno. A lot of people, when especially in Peru, Mexico, Egypt, wherever there are ancient sites, there seems to be an abundance of UFO sightings. Well,
right.
Like I said, north of Fresno, we have an abundance of UFO sightings. Well, I've been trying to figure out why. Well, as of just recently, I located some unusual ruins north of Fresno that nobody seems to can tell me what they are. I've called the Historical Society from Fresno, people who are involved from Fresno State University, and I've been to this place. I've taken video. It's sort of like in between some homes that I believe are actually keeping this place top secret, and I have been to it by trespassing, don't tell anybody, across three property lines to get to it. And I've taken video. I've actually sent video to people on my Facebook page who are involved in ancient, you know, cities and stuff like that. And I've only got one response back, to where this seems to be like Inca or Mayan work. I've had people told me that this is not Civil War. This is not Indian gold mining type of stuff, because what you see on the video now. When you watch the video, there are like statues surrounding the area. Well, I think someone just placed those there just to goof around. But when you take a look at the actual wall that has been uncovered under tons and tons of dirt that is just sitting there, and you notice the rock work and the way it's positioned at a degree angle, you know, at a slanted angle, it looks like the bottom portion of a pyramid. And a lot of people are telling me that they've been seeing so much UFO activity in this side of town that I'm trying to see if maybe it's all interconnected, one, you know, together. I haven't put that ancient ruins on my website because I'm still investigating it, but since we're talking about it, I want to let you go out there and take a look at it and look at it. Now, I called the archaeology department at Sacramento, California, and I talked to one of the head guys there, and I actually gave him the link over the phone, and while he was watching the video, I tried to tell him, okay, can you please tell me what this is? And he's looking at it, and he's going, where is this? And I'm going, north of Fresno someplace. I didn't give him an exact location. And then he started to tell me, well, I'm a professor at an Indian work, and this is not any type of Indian work I've ever seen, and I don't think it's Indian work to believe, you know, to belong with. And when he means Indian, he means Native American.
Right.
And then he told me that this is not Civil War stuff, because you would find Civil War bunkers, stuff like that, on the coast. And he was dumbfounded, and he couldn't believe what I had on video. And he was trying to get me to tell him where it was at, and I said, sorry, can't tell you. Because, you know, again, I bust my butt to get out, you know, go looking for these type of things, and then I find these things, and it's like, what the hell is this? So, you know, if you get a chance, go look at the ancient ruins north of Fresno, take a look at what we found, and this site is not registered in any type of historical site anywhere. It looked like it's been there for thousands of years because it is covered all the way up and has been uncovered in portions but stopped for some reason. And I believe it is still more to be uncovered underneath the hill where the stuff is at. But, you know, I'm trying as much as I can to get out there to figure out what's going on. But, you know, again, you know, it takes time, and I'm trying to do the best that I can. But, you know, it's just like I said, you know, Greg, there's so much stuff happening here in Fresno. I don't know what it is. You know, you got Sasquatch, you have UFOs, you have ghosts. Now you have ancient ruins. Like, what the hell?
There's a book, which I don't know if you've read. It's one of my favorite paranormal books ever, and it's the only of two paranormal books written by this guy. Have you heard of a book called The Rebirth of Pan?
No, I haven't.
The book is called The Rebirth of Pan, Hidden Faces of the American Earth Spirit. Basically, what the guy writes about is mounds, ancient ruins, things that are found that are out of place, you know, like Roman swords found in hills in Arizona. And he says that the Earth actually uses some sort of energy and channels it through us or from us to create these things. That's his idea. And then he has sort of an overarching theory above that, too. Anyway, it's a very hard book to find. And I've got a copy of it here at home and a Xerox copy of it that somebody sent me. Anyway, if you can find it, it's called The Rebirth of Pan by Jim Brandon. And when you started mentioning the structures up that you found north of Fresno, it reminded me of that. And he talks about, you know, the preponderance of strange things going on all the way from poltergeist activity to Bigfoot to UFOs, strange lights, psychic phenomena, all occurring in these areas and over and over again, and also having to do with underground things like mines and things like that. When there's mines and caves underground, it seems to affect it as well.
And that's exactly what there are a lot north of Fresno. And to be honest with you, I'm in the process I've already had five families come to me and state that there's an underground facility north of Fresno.
Huh.
Top secret, that's been there since the 1940s. And, you know, there are things happening. We also have an underground facility at the Fresno airport, four stories underground, that I've had retired military and retired police officers have told me about this.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
You know what's very the next show didn't get here, so we'll keep talking a little. You know what's funny is I wrote a piece on UFO Mystic about the Bigfoot UFO connection, and I thought, well, there's not too much Bigfoot stuff in Southern California in the desert, because usually, you know, you think about them being in mountains and in Florida, there's a skunk ape, et cetera, et cetera. But then I look up, and some guy had written up, and I don't know if it's true or not, but he'd written up a barrage of incidents happening at Edwards Air Force Base in their underground facilities, where they said they saw, believe it or not, Bigfoot walking around at night. The security cameras would catch it.
Okay. and
I don't
know
if it's true or not, but in light of all the stuff we're talking about here, it kind of makes sense.
It does. It absolutely makes sense, because I believe they're all interconnected, and I believe our military and our government has something to do with it. I really do.
Really? In what way?
Well, I think experiments gone wrong, opening dimensions, interdimensional holes where these things are coming through. And
oh, that's another thing I want to talk about, but go ahead.
Yeah, and I've had people tell me that, especially forest rangers and sheriff's officers, who know these things are up there, and they're not supposed to say anything about them, about these UFOs flying all over the place and these Sasquatches, and they need to keep their mouth shut, because this thing is for real, and there's so much of it that they've been told they need to keep their mouth shut, and no, they don't exist, and I believe that. You know, like I said, there's something going on with the military down here in Fresno, and I think they're involved somehow. And, I can go on to what's happening now with my phone and things that are happening to me. It's like, oh, my gosh.
Oh, that happened to me for a couple of years, too, and then it trailed off. Makes you kind of think that you're doing something important, and then when it stops, you feel like you've gone off the track, doesn't it?
well, they're still bugging the crap out of me, man.
Okay, well, that's good. Maybe that means that you're onto something.
Yeah.
Or that something somewhere has, this is also, you know, as you know, part of the paranormal world is strange phone calls that to UFO, paranormal, Bigfoot, all these different investigators. A lot of people I've talked to have had this happen. Gabe Valdez from Dulce, New Mexico.
Uh-huh.
He said he had all kinds of strange phone calls when he was investigating cattle mutilations, and then he showed me pictures of a tap that was put on his phone. He opened his phone up and found it, and a listening device, and he also found one in the smoke detector or the light switch or something in a couple of his rooms. And he showed me pictures of them. He said, look, I opened the wall up. I found them. Here they are. They are listening devices. Why would anybody care about a cattle mutilation, police officer investigating cattle mutilations, yet this happened to him?
Well, something happened to me where we probably don't have any more time to say this, but
we do. If the show after mine comes in, we'll get off the air. But they're not here yet, so go ahead. I want to hear it.
Okay, I work for AT&T Telephone. Okay, I'm in my van. It's too early for me to go into the yard, so I decided to park on the side street near the Fresno Air Terminal, and I right where our military facility is by coincidence. And I'm on my computer calling out my next job, and then all of a sudden I see this truck coming down on Dakota Avenue, which is right on the north side of the airport near some bunkers, and he slams on the brakes, he backs up, and he's looking right at me in a big blue, I think it was a Ford dual cab truck, and the guy drives right past me, he makes a U-ey, and he parks about five cars behind me, and I thought, okay, maybe this guy is looking at the airplanes take off, whatever. So I keep typing on my computer. All of a sudden, this Ford Green Explorer comes down Dakota at high rate speed, hits brakes, stops right in front of me, looks at me, backs up, starts driving right beside me on the side road. He looks at me, continue going. He goes all the way around the block, comes down on Chestnut Avenue, makes a left on Dakota, and I see him again, and this time he stops and parks across the street, and he's looking at me. I'm going, you got to be freaking kidding me. So I shut the laptop. I put it in drive. I'm going at him. He hit the gas. He's going down Dakota Avenue. I start following him. I mean, the guy hits 90 miles an hour right through a red light at Peach in Dakota. And he must have been going 100 miles an hour now. And obviously, I had to come to a stop. But I wanted to get the license plate number, but I couldn't do it. Now, I'm going, how in the hell did these guys know I were here? Ladies and gentlemen, I have an iPhone. That pretty much says it all right there.
Oh, the tracking?
Yeah. They're tracking me 24 hours a day. They know where I'm at all the time. And that's pretty much it. You know, so they are monitoring me now. They know what I'm doing. I've had people call me on my cell phone on the 24-hour hotline, giving me some reports of, you know, unidentified flying objects, locations, and as soon as I'm trying to get the location so I can get in my truck to get over there right now to film it, both phones go dead. And this has happened many of times. This has even happened with my sister, who lives in Sanger, called me, said, Jeff, there's a triangle hovering over here at North Avenue and McCall Avenue. And I'm making fun of her, right? And I think she's smoking crack. But no, and, you know, she said, no, it's floating, and now it's going up, and it's heading towards your area. So I gather all my stuff. I get into my truck. I'm driving out on the street. I tell my wife where I'm going. She says, okay, see ya. And I get her on the phone, my sister, and I tell her, okay, where's it going now? And she goes, it's going click. And both of our phones go dead. I look at my phone. I got all my bars on there.
Yeah.
And it takes me about 15 seconds to get her back on the line. I said, okay, Veronica, where is it? What happened? I'm going, I don't know. I'm going, you know, okay. Well, I go, well, which way is it going now? She said, it's going click. And we go dead again. And I'm going, you got to be freaking kidding me. Really? You know, and then I start cussing at the phone.
Yeah.
But no, these guys are following me. They know what I'm doing. As a matter of fact, if you go to my website on, I think I have a link that says Other Paranormal. There was at the airport, they were doing something right near where I was parked in my van a couple of years ago. They had set up tents and satellite dishes. And I was driving by on my AT&T van, and I said, what the hell is all this? Because I've never seen this ever at the airport. It looked like they had a mini base set up with water trucks, satellite dishes, trucks, everything, tents, and they were doing something. And so I pulled over, started taking pictures. That night I went over to my website, guy's house, and I said, dude, can you please put this on my site? And because I find it very odd that they actually have this going on. Because they don't do that on that area of the airport.
Yeah.
And then it went on the website at about 10 o'clock. Next morning I'm going to work. I get into my AT&T van. I'm driving right by the airport where all the stuff is set up. Everything is gone. Every single piece of equipment that was there, it was probably about 3 acres worth, mm-hmm. was gone, dude. So they. knew I placed this on my website, and they took it all down during the night. And I have I have pictures on my website of the before and after.
Huh.
I'm going, crap. Well, you know, obviously they know me now because you know I was trying to expose what they were doing, and they were doing it in plain sight. You know,
once you start, once you start opening up, things start looking very strange. But I also think that part of it is how you look at it as well. There are things, like you said, where you can't really doubt. Yeah, there were 3 acres of things out there. But so many, you start getting in a very weird mind space, and I think that weirdness starts looking back at you as well, government or not. And that's another thing in the mix that people don't normally talk about. I did have another question I forgot to ask you. There's a lot of most Bigfoot researchers, back to Bigfoot again, are very convinced that Bigfoot is a flesh and blood creature, and there's a lot of people that are maybe more outside the Bigfoot community that are question that and think it's more kind of a paranormal phenomenon, and that nobody would ever really be able to capture one. That it's only physical sometimes. Where do you fall in that spectrum?
Well, I've only been involved in the Bigfoot stuff for about 2 years. Since 2009. So. David has been doing this for way longer than I have. He is the actual Bigfoot investigator. But he has told me that these things are real. People say, like you said before, that they'll be watching this Bigfoot and they'll see it walking, all of a sudden it'll disappear. Either blend in really well or it's just gone. Well, David has seen these things, and he pretty much knows that they're flesh and blood. They're regular, they're creatures because they leave footprints. He's never seen anything disappear in front of him. You know, they do blend in really well with the forest. A lot of people might tell you that they, I saw one and it just disappeared. Well, you know, these things have been living in the forest forever and know how to camouflage themselves really well. So maybe they thought that it actually disappeared where it just stopped and, you know, walked and stopped and pretty much blended itself. I can't tell you that they're interdimensional beings and they disappear and come back whenever they want. You know, that I'm not going to say that because I have not experienced anything like that at all. But what David has told me is that these things are real. They're flesh and blood. You know, they leave footprints. They're small ones. They're big ones. He thinks that, you know, they're families out there just like what we have, families. And they have their parents and their grandparents and their kids. They're different colored Bigfoot. You know, you have your dark black and your gray and your white. And, you know, they when they reproduce, you know, they'll come out, at, you know, they're you know, their young ones will come out different colors. And it's just like, you know, just like, again, just like human beings. You know, they reproduce and, you know, when, you know, and they're real. They are definitely real. You know, why haven't anybody ever found one dead? Well, the example I wanted to give at the press conference, if somebody ever told me, if a reporter
asked,
told me, you know, was that we had an incident in the Sierras about 3 years ago where a millionaire by the name of Steve Fawcett died while flying his airplane over the Sierras. It crashed. And they send out search parties for his airplane. They found out pretty much where about it went down. But after search party after search party, they finally gave up and they pretty much, you know, said, you know, he crashed and he's dead. Well, a year later, a hiker found this airplane scattered like 400 feet or whatever. And, you know, and he found the wallet with the driver's license. So he called it in. They brought in the rescuers and cadaver dogs. And one of the cadaver dogs, about half a mile away, found a bone 2 inches long. Okay? That was the only physical evidence of Mr. Fawcett that was around, was that 2-inch piece of bone that the cadaver dog found. And that's how they were able to identify him. Obviously, they found his driver's license and ID cards and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
But that 2-inch bone, mind you, a half a mile away. Well, how do you think that bone got that far from the crash site?
Yeah, predators.
Predators. If something dies in the forest...
Scavengers,
you know,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're pretty much going to be lunch meat for whoever wants to eat you. I don't care if you're human or not human. You know, animal, human, Bigfoot. You know, if you die, you know, you're going to be eaten. That's just the way nature is. So, you know, also ask yourself, has anybody ever seen a dead bear carcass?
They have, but very rarely. I talked to you about this because I went and looked, tried to look this up.
Uh-huh.
And I found, I think, one report of somebody finding a dead bear carcass, at least on the internet. And but most of them said, well, it's hard to find them because they get eaten or, well, whatever. I mean, they decompose, especially where bears live, in places where it's where there's a lot of forest, there's a lot of plants, there's a lot of scavengers and bacteria and worms and all that stuff that can get to them. That's why there's not too many fossils of things that lived in forests because they break down very easily.
And a lot of people, and also a lot of people, too, in the Bigfoot community seem to think that, you know, when a Bigfoot goes to die, they think that they have caves, you know, up in the mountains someplace, and they'll just go into a cave and die, and that's why you'd also never, you know, find a body. Or their family members bury them, you know? Possibly, you know, another reason why you never find their bodies is because maybe they're, you know, their other Bigfoot friends or whatever happened to bury them, and that's the reason why you don't find. But you have to understand, there are millions and millions of acres out there that people have never even set foot upon, and they're asking, why haven't we found a body? Really? People don't understand how big this United States or this world is. You know, they have no clue. No clue at all.
There's not a lot of places you could find something like that. So, yeah, I kind of still stick to the paranormal explanation just because, maybe because I like it more. I don't know.
Sure. Well, no, I mean, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I'm just telling you what I know people have told me and what I've read. I mean, yeah. There are a lot of different.
Well, that seems to make sense. You know, it makes as much logical sense as well. It makes logical sense. While the paranormal theory makes logical sense if you posit that there are dimensions that things can move through, maybe it will, et cetera, et cetera. So who knows if somebody's ever going to find one of these? There was that other question I asked you. What would you do if all this stuff was solved? What if we knew what UFOs were? If we knew Bigfoots were real and very rare and hard to find, and ghosts and hauntings had to do with, you know, time doors or something like that?
I think that the world would change, especially if they found out UFOs were real. Then if the government just came out and said, okay, we do, there are aliens living among us, obviously the religion factor would probably be thrown right out the window. You know, everybody would, you would see the world in a different way, but I don't think it would end there. Because now, if that would be the case, then if they said, yes, the, you know, alien race are real, then... Now what's going to happen? Are they going to actually physically come out now and live with us? I mean, you know, there are so many theories or ideas that can happen.
That's also assuming that you think that UFOs are and aliens are physical beings that come from far away planets, which may or may not be the truth. I happen to think it's not, but that's just my opinion.
It's hard to say. I don't know, but... As far as the paranormal, I don't think it would stop right there, because if they came out and said, if they did come out and say it's real, the UFOs are real, aliens are actually real, I'm still going to try to find out more about them. You know, I mean,
Well, that's something people have brought up before. If the government comes out and tells you what you want to hear, does that mean they're telling the truth?
Well, true. I mean, they would have to bring one out and have a press conference, and bring out the leader, and all of a sudden show that leader to everybody, and then have the leader speak in a different tongue. You know what I'm saying? It can go different directions. You know, like you said, you know, if they came out and said, you know, the UFOs are real, well, then I think people's interests now are going to increase, and the non-believers are now believers, and now we want to know more.
Right.
I mean, you know, tell me more. Where are these things coming from? Who are they? You know, I want to know everything to know about them.
Yeah, well, that's why I don't think anything's going to be revealed, because I don't think the government knows.
Oh, yeah.
I think they know that there's something strange going on, but I don't think they know how to explain it.
If you don't know how
to explain it, what are you going to... You can't admit that.
Right. No, and I think you're right. The military does know. Our government does know that this stuff is happening. And I think eventually it's going to come out, and I think they are preparing us. And I believe what you see now on TV has a lot to do with it. I really believe that. I believe they're conditioning us. So when the time does happen, people aren't going to freak, because, you know, there are a good percentage of people who do not want to know about this stuff. And when this stuff does come out and it does become reality, you know, they are going to freak big time. And I don't know how they're going to be able to handle it. When it does come out and they finally admit to it, I'm going to say, yeah, told you so. But, you know, I'm not going to go out and totally freak out on it. But I think a lot of people will freak out, and there'll be mass suicides and killings, and people will just go cuckoo. Because, you know, when you are now saying that there are other beings from other worlds here, and the government are acknowledging it, then their beliefs have been shot out. You know, like, you know, I was born Catholic, okay?
Yep.
You know, so I believe in God. But what is God? You know, God could be anything, you know? But I believe that, you know, there is a God, but, you know, who is God? We don't know. You know, God could be an alien race. I don't know.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that my religion is shot out the door. But, you know, I believe that, you know, something else put us here for a reason, and we're here for a reason, and And I can't wait to find out what that reason is.
Right, exactly. I think I have a little bit different idea than you. I think that it's and this is you've never heard my show before or been on it, obviously, but after I get some of the things out of the way, it kind of turns more into a conversation, which I hope you don't mind.
No, not at all. Not at all.
What I've been saying on this show, actually, with some of the other guests and with the co-host that I have here, Walter Bosley, is we've been kicking the idea around that the and this is not, you know, original to us, but that what's going on is so strange that I don't think our brains are ready to meet it on its own terms. What we're doing is looking at it in the way that we can look at it. And I think that if there, and this is one model, I don't, you know, this isn't a theory I think is going to happen, but perhaps that when there's two different things, the way we look at it and the way whatever this thing is wants to look to us. And I don't know if it controls it. Maybe we control it with our own consciousness and we just see what we can accept or that our brains can comprehend or conceptualize at the time. So I think when something happens where we acknowledge as a race that there is some other kind of intelligence around that interacts with us from time to time, I don't know what form that's going to take. And I don't think it's going to be aliens coming from other planets. I really don't.
I think
it's going to be some other kind of contact that we have. And it might be something that's very democratic, the way that Whitley Strieber describes it, where they're coming in and trying to get it from the bottom up instead of from the top down, if you know what I mean.
So you think maybe
when we find out what it is, it's going to be in a format that we can't comprehend right now.
Okay.
Because we are not ready to meet it on its terms or in terms that we can understand besides aliens from other planets. And I don't think that's what it is. I think that's what we would like to think that it is.
Okay.
And that we have been told that it is. And that people from all walks of life and from all parts of the power structure think that it is. But I don't think that's what it quote-unquote is. I think it's something that our brains can't conceptualize right now. We know it's there. We know it's not us. But we also... we aren't ready to accept it for what it is. And we may never be. I mean, you know, people used to think it was demons and angels and leprechauns and all these other things, obviously.
Right.
Or incubus and succubus and all. And it changes from each culture to the next. And it's been going on for thousands of years. Why people think it's suddenly going to be revealed because they think that this era has the best grasp on reality, I don't know. I don't agree with that.
Okay. It sounds to me, I think I know what you're saying, and it reminds me of the show Fringe. You know, I believe that it's something to, when they do reveal it, it's people, like you said, are not going to understand. It's mind-blowing. It's just not going to make sense to anybody, and maybe that's one of the reasons, like you're saying, why they haven't told us now.
Because I don't think they can comprehend it either. The people that are closest to, yes, this really is a phenomenon, and yes, it is something we have to deal with. I don't think they're ready to comprehend it either. They're kind of, and I think they know it, too. I think they know that they're dancing around the edge of it and dancing around the concept, trying to figure out how to conceptualize it, and they can't quite do it. And if you admit that, you admit that you're powerless against something, which is why I don't think it's going to be admitted by the power structure.
So what do you think is going to happen then on the 2012?
I don't think anything's going to happen except possibly the part that I can accept is that there's some kind of shift in the way that that we look at things or some kind of shift in consciousness or whatever you want to call it. But I don't think it's something that's going to happen right at its instant, like that date. And, you know, I'm not totally sold that's a date that we even have to care about. Because how many times in the past have people said everything's going to end now or everything's going to change now? It's been happening for thousands and thousands of years, and nothing ever really changed, really, except through very long, like a revolution in thought or technology or something will come, and it will take tens or hundreds of years, depending on people's level of communication and sophistication, for that to move through the society. And I, you know, that I think that's how the UFO thing is. If it will take our way of looking at things to change before the phenomenon changes and before we get a little better handle on it. And I don't know if in my lifetime we will ever have a handle on it. And I don't know if the 2012 thing is anything we have to worry about. I don't know if I want to be proven wrong.
Right.
But my prediction is nothing obvious will change.
Okay. It's hard to say what's going to happen. It's kind of funny with all of the situations that are happening now, the turn of events with the comet, the Lennon, and all that happening. Now we have more earthquakes happening, the weather phenomena. It's hard to say.
Yeah.
But things are definitely happening, and they're noticeable. Very much noticeable.
Yeah, I think some things are reporting, like I said, a reporting thing. But there's also, there's people arguing against the climate change and for it. But if you look at it really carefully, it seems to hold water. Yes, there is some sort of climate change happening. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I to be honest too, I don't know what's going to happen. They say stuff will happen this year. And, in November and pretty soon here, something is supposed to happen. Now, if that does happen, then maybe next year something will happen. I don't know. Is there any way to prepare for something like that? No. I think, but what's kind of funny though is that you hear from people and why are, the governments preparing, building underground facilities, stocking up on food, and they've been doing this now for several years. They've been doing it
since the 50s.
Yeah.
Since now, the late 40s, actually. 1947, yeah, 46, 47 is when it started.
Now, is it because back then they were afraid of, nuclear war? But if that was the case, then why haven't they stopped? Now it's more to where, it's the facilities like at the Denver airport, it's much more apparent now. You have just stocking up, a lot of stocking up and a lot of preparedness happening that the governments are preparing for something. Now, why would they be spending billions and billions of dollars preparing, stocking up for something that, that they think is going to happen, but the question is, what is going to happen?
Yeah.
I don't know if none of this stuff, people know what's happening out there. There are leaks, and that's how we find out, these underground facilities are being built. They're stocking away food, rations, all this kind of stuff. Why are they doing that? I don't understand why would they be doing that and spending billions of our tax dollars and doing that for the government officials. I think they've been doing it.
They've been doing it for quite a long time. A couple of weeks ago, actually, I was talking to another guest, and John Alexander, if you know who that is, has been on radio shows recently and said and disclosed what he thinks that MJ-12 was. And you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I actually know the guy that got that document sent to him. I mean, Bill Moore. I've had him on my show a few times. It was sent to his partner's house, but him and Jamie Chandray looked at it. Anyway, that caused a big furor for a long time in the UFO community, and it still is. But nobody's ever been able to figure out or find anything that connects it to anything besides a few documents that say MJ-12 UFO stuff on it, except the one document, the Cutler-Twining memo, if you know what I'm talking about, saying that a special assistant to the president was going to have a meeting moved because of some scheduling problem, and it says the MJ-12 meeting will be moved to some other time, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't say what MJ-12 is. Now, this reminded me, because you started saying about digging holes and having the government, people in the government in power have a place to go if the world starts falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
He said that MJ-12 was a program that was started in the 1940s for continuation of government. Had nothing to do with UFOs. which I suspected for a long time. Something that was very hard to track, that was really secret, and that you could hang all this UFO stuff on. And that, but it's just as fascinating. Why would that, what were they doing? And can we find any documents to support the idea that it was the continuation of government program and not a UFO thing, which I never thought it was?
Yeah, what I kind of find that odd is that with all the UFO activity that we have, I have seen with my own eyes out here in Fresno, you know, we have black triangles flying all the time. Okay,
yeah.
And I believe those are ours, top secret, you know, military, you know, TR-3Bs. But when you have our jets chasing other types of unidentified flying objects around Fresno, and these things just go, whoosh, are out of here, and then the jets obviously can't catch up to them and return back to
are
the
those
Fresno
the terminal. Do the triangles fly like that?
No, the triangles actually fly very slowly.
I think it's because they're lighter than aircraft, and they fly them at night with lights on them. You can see pictures of triangular and boomerang-shaped lighter than aircraft that are not secret at all.
No, they're not. And they fly them down here over Fresno all the time. And I think they're coming over here from, you know, China Lake and Area 51.
Right,
And they just figure, you know what, the Fresno people are stupid. They think we're airplanes. We're just going to fly over Fresno.
Yeah, but there are these other things that they chase that are not the triangles that move very quickly.
Yes, and that's what really throws me for a loop. Is obviously those are not ours. Do they belong to the other governments? Well, I don't think so, to be honest.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Maybe they are ours, and somebody wants you to think that they're not. It's just an idea.
Right. Good question. But again, I don't think NORAD would be sending our military, you know, to go chasing after these things if they were ours, and hoping and causing harm to our military personnel. And what happens if the jet happens to crash over, you know, the city? I just can't see that. And it's happened many, many times where these jets are chasing after these.
Oh, I didn't say every time. I just said some of the time. You know, maybe this happens. I mean, if I wanted people to think a certain way, the theatrics of doing, and this has been proven over and over again, the military and the intelligence will resort to all kinds of theatrics to get a certain impression across. That doesn't mean that all things they're chasing are ours. They could be other things too. I mean, it does not rule that out whatsoever. But I think people have to consider the possibility that once in a while some of these things, like you said, are ours. And that the fact that trying to ingrain that into our brains, that it's some UFO from another planet or whatever, would be very convenient to them.
And I think you're right on that. Like I said, you know, there are many, many reports of these objects flying over Fresno, and you know, at early times of the day, 7, 8, 9 o'clock at night.
Where everybody can see them.
Yeah, where everybody can see them, followed by military helicopters. And these things are flying, you know. I had a report in a town called Fowler, California, which is just south of Fresno.
Yes, we drove through it on the way there.
Okay. There was a couple sitting on the porch of their house, and they're playing cards. And all of a sudden, the gentleman looks up, and they see this boomerang craft flying treetop next to a church and this almost hitting the steeples, and it's like it's the shape of a boomerang. And he turns and takes his wife and says, "What the hell is that?" And the thing is just cruising over Fowler, you know, and has on the front it has all white bright lights, you know, and he's going. It was the size of a freaking 737.
Yeah,
but it didn't make any noise, and it's just cruising over Fowler, you know. Well, then that's probably ours, but you know, it's just like you know, this stuff is happening all the time. Now, it would have been a different story if he would have said, you know, right after we saw it, then we saw these jets chasing after it. Then it would have been a different story. But but this stuff is happening all the time, everywhere.
Yeah,
you know. So now I want to know, you know, where are we getting the technology for this, man?
Yeah. Well, the other thing I'm thinking is while you're saying this is, Why do they need to keep chasing them? If they never catch up with the damn things, why do they chase them?
I don't know. That doesn't
make any sense to me. You'd think after a while, it's like, well, let's not draw any attention to it. Just let the damn thing fly by.
Right.
So that's why I kind of lean towards the... I'm a conspiracy-type person anyway.
Sure.
If you read Project Beta, which is a book I wrote about this subject, you will see where I'm coming from, that I think there's a lot more military things going on where people think they're UFOs and the government is perfectly happy, and the private companies that build these things for them are perfectly happy to let people think that, because it just makes people laugh at it and basically ignore it. But the upshot of this is that all the quote unquote real stuff, people kind of laugh at it, ignore that too.
Yeah. Then since you're talking about that, then how do you, what do you think about the abductions and all that kind of stuff happening to people? Is that us doing it to them, or?
No,
plane, or what do you think?
Well, I think the mistake a lot of people make is that they will look at a problem, a paranormal problem, and say, what is the explanation?
Uh-huh.
Now, you've already boxed yourself into a definition there by saying, what is the explanation, meaning there's one. And for a lot of these things, I'm as certain as I can be that there's more than one explanation, all the way from misidentification, hoax, all the stuff that skeptics love to say, all the way up to it's something completely unknown that is not human that is interacting with us. I think it, and I think the spectrum goes all the way through from one end to the other of that.
Okay.
Now, when you talk about abductions, I will apply the same logic to that. I think in some cases, probably a minority of them, there is something that is not human that is interacting with people in a very strange way and without their consent and really bothering them. I think maybe in some cases that the government, if you know about the military abduction thing, and private industry may be doing this to people to see what is going on, to test them, to do some sort of psychological warfare. And then, you know, there's also the aspect where I think there are some people that have maybe dreams or something like that, and they're confabulating them into a ready-made story, especially now when everybody knows about UFO abductions. And they may have access to some sort of information that we don't when they get in that headspace where, you know, an abduction researcher says, well, he should know that because that's never in the literature. I think there's a way of finding that out in an altered state of mind. But like I said, it goes all the way from one end of the spectrum to the other. And I think that the abduction phenomenon falls all the way along that line from complete mundane to completely bizarre and not caused by the person or by the military or whatever. And I think the majority of them fall along the line where there isn't something else affecting somebody. And probably a minority of them, I don't know what the percentage is, are people interacting with something that they can't explain that is not them and is not created by their mind. However, I think that our mind in a strange encounter like that, whether it be an abduction or a UFO thing or a Bigfoot or a haunting or whatever, in a lot of cases, people forget to include themselves as the data, if you know what I'm saying, that they forget that what they're seeing is something extremely strange and that their mind is doing a furious thing trying to figure out what something is, and it will jump on the first thing that it thinks that is comfortable with, that it can make sense of, to explain whatever that experience is, no matter what it is, all the way from a misidentification to an actual encounter with an unknown. And that our brains getting in the way is a problem that we have to deal with. Our models getting in the way, if you know what I'm saying.
Right.
As you thought you were just going to be on a silly show with somebody asking questions.
No, not at all.
Bigfoot. It's turned into kind of a discussion. But I like to hear what people think, you know.
No, absolutely. Being that I was an investigator with MUFON allowed me to actually go and talk to people and to hear their stories, you know, from them and explain what they encountered, what the family encountered. I actually interviewed families with kids as young as 4
uh-huh.
and 3 years old who, you know, I actually physically took these people and separated them and did interviews with all the family.
Right.
And the things these young kids were telling me, it's like there's no way their parents would ever teach them what to say. You know, they would describe to me events that were occurring to them that involved aliens, you know, and interacting with them in certain ways to where how could a child of this age come up with something like that?
Oh, I didn't say they were making it up.
No,
I didn't. What I said was I think that their subconscious, their personalities, and everything else that goes into being a human being of whatever age is filtering whatever is happening to them and presenting it in a way that makes sense to them. And I think that bringing up children, I think, is a good example there. I mean, did you find when you talked to them that their stories were a little bit divergent from what their parents said, or was it was a case-by-case kind of thing?
No, pretty much on the nose when it came to what their parents said, as far as what has been happening to the whole family.
Okay.
You know, know that their stories all pretty much stayed right on, and that also came to mind, you know, okay, are their parents trying to tell them what to say?
Oh, no, I don't think their parents told them what to say, but I'm certain they talked about it.
Sure.
And if in the course of talking about it, it may have changed the experience for those children a little bit, because you can be very affected. Look here, you know, Jeffrey, I'm not saying these people are all making up and it's BS and all that. What I'm saying is I think that what people are reporting is what our human mind wants to see when that information comes through, be it subconsciously, be it culturally, be it, you know, collective unconsciously, whatever. Or, you know, people say I'm full of crap and that, you know, we should call a spade, and it really is what's going on. But I think history has shown us that when it comes to something paranormal and something strange and something that people don't normally encounter, that people see different things at different times. Why weren't they seeing, you know, why weren't people having abductions and aliens and all that in 1886? Were the aliens different then? I don't know. But I think a lot of the reference comes from us, and that it makes it very hard to figure out what that other thing is, who the other is, you know?
Yeah, there is definitely a lot of things going on, and you can interpret it in many ways. I, to this day, still haven't figured it out, and obviously I don't know if we ever will, like you said, in our lifetime. I don't know.
I don't know either. I just look for more creative explanations because it's interesting to me, not because I think other people are wrong. I just like variety, and I like I like originality, and if I can find something like that, I'm attracted to it. And whether it's right or not, I don't know, because you know we don't have any answers yet. But I figure looking for the strangeness in the strange stuff might be a little bit more fruitful than looking for the mundane and looking for the stuff that fits and the stuff that we expect, if you see what I'm saying here.
Well, and me coming from the background that I am, you know, I've watched every single alien movie, you know, many, many times over.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what I want to believe, and I guess that's pretty much what is embedded in my brain, that, you know, those possibly can be the only explanation that, from what I have seen so far, as far as interviewing families and having children draw me descriptions of whatever they've been seeing in the corner of their room, and stuff like that, and all of a sudden having them tell me that, you know, the military are following them, you know, stuff like that. It's just like you could definitely bring up different conclusions that the military are the ones doing this to them, but it's like you said, it's God, there's so many avenues you can actually take this to, and it's hard, but you know, I've witnessed so many different things happening, and people have actually told me what is actually going on, and I've actually had military and police officers tell me what is actually happening. If one of these days, when it finally comes out, like you said, you know, it's going to blow people's minds, and I don't think we are ready for that. And I don't know. I think, though, to be honest, I really do think something is going to happen next year.
Hmm.
I don't think the world is going to end. But I think something is going to happen, and I think we're getting closer to that point because of what is happening out there in the world right now. And I'm not saying weather anomalies and all that kind of crap, but
yeah.
Things are happening more and more to where the military are trying to keep all this that is happening on a hush-hush, you know, situation. And I believe next year, I really do, something major is going to happen. And I don't know what it is.
You could be right, and a lot of people could be right.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is, though. I really don't know what it is yet, and I'm still picking my nose and, you know, and people's, you know, and you know, trespassing in private properties and getting myself in trouble.
I did the same thing when I was working on Weird California and some other things. I didn't tell people at the beginning. I emailed or talked with you, at least emailed, when I was working on Weird California, because there was a story in Sanger about Creek Road, which was supposedly connected to the La Llorona legend, and that there were the story was a woman had crashed in the creek or something like that. What was the story with that story?
Well,
and people are kind of weirded out about that area.
You know what's funny is that you know, when you were telling me, you know, that you called me back in 2005, I'm going,
or four, I think.
Yeah, 2004. I'm going, what are you talking about? And then I finally realized, I'm going, wait a minute, I remember somebody calling me about Snake Road.
Yeah, Snake Road, sorry.
Yeah, and then it's what's funny is I told my wife 2 days ago, because we have the book, The Weird California. She's a big freak like me, okay? We have it. Matter of fact, I have it open at page 205 right now. okay, because I see it's right here. And she's going, what? Greg was here? He goes, shit, if I would have known that, I would have had to autograph the book. which is kind of funny. So the next time I see you, you're going to have to autograph the book.
Well, I want to come up and look at these walls and go out to this area with you. Maybe nothing will happen, but if not, the Sierras are great for camping.
Oh, yeah. No. What I'll do is, if you want, I'll take you to have you looked at the ancient ruins yet?
No. I want to see it. I have a friend that grew up in Fresno. His name is Adam Gorightly. He's also a writer. And I've known him for years, and he's like, really? I never heard about this, and I grew up in Fresno. He lives in Oakhurst.
Okay.
So
Oakhurst is not far from these sites.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we can meet him halfway.
I'm sure he's never even knew these sites were there.
No, he didn't. He actually messaged me while we were doing the show and said, what? Really? I've never heard of this. Because he's, like I said, he grew up in Fresno. He was born and raised in Fresno.
Yeah. Well, so there you go. And he writes for 14. What is that? 14 times, right? I believe it. What did he write for? Doesn't he write for?
Well, he's written for me when I had a magazine and a UFO magazine and a few other places.
Oh, that's right.
In fact,
I
think he had called and said he was coming for UFO magazine, but he's to cover the story of the press conference. But he actually works for the Forest Service, and he's out working the fires in Arizona right now.
Oh, wow, he's over there. Okay.
Yeah, so he's well familiar with the forest and the Sierra and everything around there, and he lives in Oakhurst, which is basically on the entrance to Yosemite. So,
wow. Well, I tell you right now, like I said, you know, once he takes a look at this video, he's going to go, what the hell is that and where is that? Because, you know, this is something to where it shouldn't even be there. And a lot of people, matter of fact, nobody knows it's there, which is kind of cool. So,
right.
You are going to come with us Bigfoot hunting. I know you are. So.
Oh, of course I will. But do it quick, because otherwise I'll get a job and everything will be ruined.
Well, we'll do it on a weekend, though. It's going to be on a weekend.
Oh, okay. But
when we go up there, it's usually on a weekend. So you'll be fine.
Okay. Well, whatever. I mean, I'll probably come up and do some other research on other things while I'm there.
Right on.
We've been on the phone for almost 3 hours.
3 hours. You imagine that?
And I'm going to put the whole thing up on the Radio Mysterioso site. Is there, and I probably want to, even though the next show isn't right here right now, I feel myself getting sleepy and a little bit dopey because I can't think of any more questions. Is there anything you would like to say, like publicity about something you want to, or it's a place to go look at things, or a way for people to contact you if they have questions?
Right. Well, just my everything, all the information is on my website. My 24-hour hotline is on there. My email is on there. If you have any questions on what we do, give me a ring, give me an email. You know, I'm not, promoting anything. All I, I do what I do because I love what I do as far as the paranormal goes. We don't charge for our services. I never will. I'm the most honest guy you will ever meet. What happened to us Memorial Day weekend happened. We believe we have what we think we have on there because of all the circumstances leading to the area. The things that are happening right now around Fresno are actually happening, and among other places throughout the world. And, this paranormal stuff is just, I love it. I love it to death. So, people want to call me and just talk to me. They, call me on my 24-hour hotline, but if it's just a chat, make sure it's during the day and not the night.
All right. Well, thanks. Go ahead.
No, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it. So.
Well, thanks so much for staying on so late with me. I said, I bet you didn't know how many you haven't. Have you been on other interview shows before? You must have.
Oh yeah, many times.
Okay,
this one is the longest I've ever been on.
Well, if I get interested to talk to somebody about something and the next show hasn't come in, I will do it. I've got 2 and 3 hour shows actually posted up on the Ronnie Mysterioso site. It's just it's free form. I don't have any sponsor or anything like that. And I do this because I want to talk to people. I used to do it with a magazine. Now I'm doing it with the radio show. And coming up to see that conference, I thought people hadn't really gotten the whole story. Neither had I. So I wanted to ask you more questions, which you've answered.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
And I'm glad you brought me on here to answer those questions because now people know the real story. So,
okay,
Greg, I'll talk to you later, and you take care. Okay.
Okay, I'll put the link up for the site, and I'll send it. Well, you know where the site is, so when it's up, you can link it to yours or whatever you want to do with it. I'll put the show up either tonight or tomorrow.
Awesome. Appreciate that.
Okay, we've been talking with Jeffrey Gonzalez, who runs the Sanger Paranormal Society. Thanks so much.
No problem, Greg. You take care. Have a good night.
You too.
Okay. See ya.
All right. Bye. Yeah, I didn't want to keep Jeffrey up very much later. I mean, he's got a family, and his wife needs to go to sleep and go to work tomorrow, and so does he. So, he said he didn't have to work till a little later tomorrow. I really wanted to find out about the backstory on the Bigfoot thing, and also, as it turned out, have a discussion with him about the paranormal in general and what somebody on the front lines of doing actual paranormal research on a daily basis would think about what I had to say about it. So I like having these people on. And especially Jeffrey, because they found something that's potentially important and potentially will change our ideas about things. I mean, I hope that moves forward and they get their funding, etc. Radio Mysterioso is finally going to end here. We will be back next week. Ken Thomas will be on with us. Ken's new book right now is called JFK and UFO, Military Industrial Conspiracy and Cover-Up from Maury Allen to Dallas. Ken will be on next week to talk about that. I bet Jeffrey would be interested in that book. Like I said, thanks for listening. Radio Mysterioso will be back next week on July 3rd. This is one of my favorite songs. I'll just play it. How about Abominable Snow Creature? Do I have that on here? By Marvin Wallace. It's not really a Bigfoot song, but it's close enough. And Radio Mysterioso will be back with you next week from 8 to 10 p.m. every Sunday. And keep a lookout on the website, which I am working on as we speak. Every week to improve and get more people to listen. Start that revolution.
Away up high in the wind and cold of the Himalayan snows, there's a creature there I can't forget no matter where I go. I was a mountain climber many years ago, and there wasn't a place I wouldn't go. But when I saw that strange creature in the snow, it made my blood run cold. Abominable snow creature hiding in the snow. Abominable snow creature, you'll haunt me wherever I go. It stood upright like a giant man, and it had a long white mane. It had red eyes and pointed ears and great long sharp fangs. I was heading up towards the mountain peak when I saw it coming my way. I grabbed a rope and I started to go. Then I felt that mountain sway. He hit me hard with a fist of steel, and I went a-rolling in the snow. And I didn't stop till I hit a rock 1,000 feet below. Abominable snow creature hiding in the snow. Abominable snow creature, you'll haunt me wherever I go. Now I'll never climb another mountain, and I'm gonna watch where I go, 'cause I'll never know when I'm gonna meet that strange creature of the snow. Away up high on a windy ridge where a mountain goat wouldn't go, I saw that strange creature in the snow, that strange creature in the snow. Abominable snow creature hiding in the snow. Abominable snow creature, you'll haunt me